now.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan. Peter and Julene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Julene.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Julene Jordan, welcome back.
It feels like you've been gone a long time.
It does feel that way. And my voice still not 100%, but I can speak at least this week.
Yeah, so last week, was it? Yeah, you were just coming back from the premiere.
Two weeks ago, from the Jackass 3D premiere.
And in Los Angeles.
Yeah, and this is what going to a Jackass 3D premiere does to you.
Yeah.
You can't speak for 2 weeks afterwards.
No, you're not. It sounds like you're a smoker.
Never.
I know. Well, hey, welcome back. I missed you. I think from all the email we got, people missed you as well. We are a team. And the other part of the team, well, there's a few more legs to the team.
Yes.
One, very important, Stephanie, who will take your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
Get you on the air to talk about whatever you want to talk about, responding to us, raise other subjects, because this is a phone-in talk show where we talk about the issues confronting us, our communities, our neighborhoods, our state, our government, the world, outer space.
Yeah, there's plenty of outer space happening.
Yeah, there is indeed. Facebook friends always wanted. You can just go to Facebook at Night Call. I'm sorry. What is it? Facebook.com/Night Call.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so we've been getting a lot of new friends. And you and Debbie and Stephanie have been working on that big time.
We're on it. Yeah. We actually have things happening on there now. We promised for a year.
Yeah.
And we finally followed through.
You're still missing one very important person, though, on Facebook. Me.
What do you mean?
I don't.
Oh, you're not going on there. Although, I'm posting your, you know, when you send out your blast emails.
Oh.
I'm posting that in notes, so you are on there. Sorry, Peter.
You scared me. I thought you were going to say, like, my home phone number or something like that.
No.
I mean, that's okay. There used to be somebody with the first, a relative, actually, with the same first initial as me. And so when I get off the air, it turned out that this Patricia Werby, who doesn't live in the area any longer.
Oh, that's just your drag name.
That's right. But and so she would get all these calls like at 1 and 2 in the morning.
Mad?
Some yes, some no.
Yeah.
And I said, well, gee, but, she was actually my cousin's wife. A much older cousin. And so I said, that's horrible. And she's, oh, I don't know. We talked to him for a while. And
that is funny.
Yeah, whatever.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, everybody except most of us is talking about the elections coming up. Well, why I say that, that most of the lead stories and all the online news sites, in the newspapers, the network and the cable news, it talks about the election in the manner that it was like commanding everyone's attention and everyone who's over 18 is going to be participating in it. But I suspect that probably the turnout will be way below 50%.
Usually it's around 32 average.
Yeah. So you could have
voters. So get out there, I say.
Eligible voters. And so you could have, in terms of total votes that go out to one party or another, I mean, they'll probably share like 16 to 20%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And think of the countries.
This is a landslide.
Right. Think of the countries where people, you know, show up in the 90th percent.
There's some countries that it's illegal not to vote.
Yeah.
I think Australia.
I think you might be right. Yeah, I'm not sure.
I wouldn't like that.
Well, I don't like to be told to do anything.
Yeah.
Crying out loud.
Well, but all the conventional wisdom is just because of the pattern that's happened over the last 100 years in what's called midterm elections. It's the middle of the term of the elected president that the party in power often, in fact, usually loses seats. Sometimes it's a real blowout, like 1994, for instance, when the Republicans won big. And they had both houses were controlled by the Republicans, although there was a Democratic president, Bill Clinton. And they said, all right, we are, you know, this dude is history, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in 1996, am I catching what you had?
Gosh, I hope not.
In 1996, of course, Clinton won again, so there's no telling. You know, this is going to be interesting because here, I'm just looking at another one of these endless articles. The Republicans poised to seize the House, if not the Senate. Costly and polarizing congressional campaign head into its closing week with Republicans in a strong position to win the House, but with Democrats maintaining a narrow edge in the battle for the Senate, according to a race-by-race review. Now, there's a lot going on here, and as I used to say during the Bush years, one hardly knows where to begin.
It's true.
Yeah.
We could start with California, where I do believe Ms. Richie Meg Crazy Lady is going down in the polls rapidly. Yeah.
That is
Meg Whitman.
Christy Whitman was in New Jersey.
Christine O'Donnell?
No.
Oh,
okay. No.
Which we get all these crazy ladies confused.
She is not the worst. She's not like absolutely crazy like a lot of these Republican teabags.
She's just rich crazy.
She has spent $141 million out of her personal account.
My gosh.
Yeah.
How bad do you want it, right?
When you include donations, she spent $163 million in total. I mean, this is insane. In fact,
she could have put that money to some really great causes, Peter.
Three Republican candidates have spent nearly $250 million on statewide campaigns. Now, again, folks, this is three Republicans who have spent nearly $250 million on statewide campaigns.
$1 billion.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Ooh. And let's see. She's 8 percentage points behind former Governor Jerry Brown, the Democrat. So with all that money, I mean, I don't even know what it's like. I don't watch a lot of television programs. I mean,
right.
So I don't see all these ads, but I don't know.
I don't watch a lot of television either. The only ones that I've really seen are Snyder and Verge.
Yeah. The
ads. More Snyder than Verge, clearly, because he's outspending him 10-1.
Is that right?
That's what I've heard.
Okay. Yeah, those are, by the way, if you're listening to some other state, that's Rick Snyder, the Republican candidate who's never held political office. He's running for governor on the Republican ticket. And Verge Bonero, a Democratic candidate, the mayor of Lansing, Michigan, the state capital.
I've got my Verge sign in the yard.
Do you?
Well, you know what? I really do it just to kind of PO off my Republican neighbor.
You have Republican. Don't you kind of live like...
I have one.
Yeah.
I have one, and I like to bother her.
Well, I
don't think political sign.
I don't think, in fairness, Rick Snyder, the Republican candidate for governor of Michigan, is not a teabagger.
I hear he's rather moderate.
He's rather moderate, which means he's only far right wing as opposed to insane, crazed right wing.
Yeah.
I don't even know, to tell you the truth, I have to say, I'm not even quite sure what his platform is. I don't think him being elected to the governor's office is going to be a disaster in the manner that some of these nutballs that the Republicans are running would be. But one of the things that I think would be very interesting, and, well, let me say first off, I don't think that this Republican tidal wave is a slam dunk.
I agree.
Because one of the things that could happen is that all these people that said, you know, I voted for I voted for the Democrats in 2008. There hasn't been the kind of change I wanted. I'm discouraged. I'm disappointed. And I'm with the Democrats, and I'm staying home. In fact, someone who...
And this is not you speaking. This is what you're saying a lot of people are saying.
Yeah, I just ran into one of our colleagues who told me, he said, you know, I'm just staying home. And here, too, this is an email that came in. And by the way, you can send us emails at 313... No, you'll never get it there doing that. If you send us an email, go to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And the email address is here, but not who signed it. It's Pete. What hope is there for people that don't like either Snyder or Bonero? Well, there are options on the left. There's the Green Party. I think it's greenmi.org. And they certainly have an attractive program. One only wishes that the Democrats were running on a platform such as the Green Party has. And that is, peace, social justice, environmental programs that would protect the earth rather than attacking and destroying it. But that's not on the agenda. And most people would feel now, I suspect, well, if you vote for the Green candidate for governor, that would probably help Rick Snyder, the Republican.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't. So I'll tell you, if someone said to me, I'm not voting, man. I have had it with both of these parties. I don't think anything of either of them. They're both just a racket. Neither of them have helped us. We've heard that a lot.
Sure.
I would say, okay. I mean, I wouldn't, you know, maybe I would say, well, the Dems are a little better, in some cases a lot better on some issues than the Republicans.
You're no Ed Schultz, Peter. You should hear him raving on and on and on and on.
That's one of our talk show colleagues on MSNBC, the Ed Show. I think it's on, what, 6 o'clock?
He has a radio show, too. Yeah. But not competing with any of our shows, okay, of course, but I kind of like the guy. I mean, he is straight Democratic Party, but he is passionate.
He's
passionate.
But, and certainly, you know, one of the things that's happened, the Democrats have passed an enormous amount of legislation. In fact, the legislation that was passed by the Democratic Congress, controlled Congress, even with all the obstructionism of the Republicans who said no to every single thing, it hasn't been enough to fix what's wrong with this country.
Well, how in that? Hell could it be?
No, well, they
it's
could.
Going to take, if I had kids, it'd be my grandchildren.
Well.
And their grandchildren till all this is fixed, don't you think?
It really necessitated policies that are more radical than either of the two parties are going to.
True.
On the right, these people will say, we should have just let all these banks and financial institutions sink. They really were too big to fail. They had positioned themselves within the economy, the world economy as well, not just the domestic economy. Had they all collapsed, it could have dragged the whole economy of the world down. Certainly ours. I mean, things would have been tremendously worse than they are now. And that's blackmail. I'm not saying I think that's really great that we took our taxpayer money, bailed out these gangsters, the people that whose greed and malfeasance and misfeasance caused all of this, and now they're being rewarded because they're the only people getting richer. All the rest of us, as a class, like the middle class and working class, the poor, we're all doing, you know, worse. Maybe some of us are doing a little better than others, but in the main, who's really come out smelling like a rose are the same people, the same criminals who benefited for the original crime now are benefiting from the fix. And the fix, of course, and it was initiated by George W. Bush. And that's not so funny that he would be friends with the ultra rich and the big wealthy institutions. But here's what the Republicans have done. And in fact, this is from Yahoo News. It says a productive Congress gets no respect from voters. And I'm not trying to sell you on the Congress, but let's at least have all the facts. See, there were two landmark acts of this session, which were the health care overhaul, which is they've been trying to do this since Franklin Roosevelt, and also the Wall Street Accountability Act. Neither of these would have come into being with Republicans, certainly. Yeah. And you can say, the health care, you know what that means? I think it's really a poor act and really limited. And it was really limited because of, again, Republican obstructionism and also a sector of very conservative Democrats. But also, think about the legislation that the Democrats put into operation. Making college loans more affordable. They did that Cash for Clunkers program that helped rejuvenate the auto industry, something we care a little bit about here in Detroit. They have this new consumer protection bill for credit card users. They made it easier for women to challenge pay discrimination. They increased federal regulation of tobacco products. Oh, man, they're limiting my freedom to poison myself and other people, right? They a bill cracking down on waste in the Pentagon weapons acquisition. And none of this would have happened under the Republicans. Making a tax based on sexual orientation a federal hate crime, giving businesses tax incentives to hire unemployed workers. Would there? I don't know. I can't remember. Well, the Republicans probably opposed that as well. I think they did. Tax credits for first-time homeowners. 3/4 of the American people disapprove of Congress. So, you know, it is. So, yes, can we? Stephanie is asking, can we see what she has typed as she takes the phone calls at 313-298-WRIF? No, can't. So let's see. And you have things, you know, that, for instance, the Obama Justice Department has just sued Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan, saying that the company that dominates the business in Michigan has violated antitrust laws. And one of the things they've done is they've got this huge competitive advantage, and they force hospitals to charge higher prices to Blue Cross rivals. Okay? I mean, this is what is standard business for the healthcare industry. I mean, do you really think President McCain would have done that? I don't think so.
Oh my gosh! Shudder.
I don't think so. Yeah. So let's see. There's also, I mean, is this going to be a blowout for the Republicans? And should we care? I'll tell you what.
I say yes.
Yes. Well, one of the things that's bothersome about this, I mean, for one thing, nothing will happen at all, because there's no way in the world is Barack Obama going to sign. Well, let me finish my sentence, then I will examine whether I'm correct.
Think about that.
Think about what I said. We'll sign Republican legislation. You got to remember, Bill Clinton did. He signed NAFTA, which was a Republican bill. The majority of Democrats opposed that. And what are the Telecommunications Act?
Yeah, two biggies.
That was also repealing the bill that allowed banks to go into speculative investments, which set the stage for the final ruination under Bush. And those were all signed by Clinton, but those were essentially all Republican bills. Why in the hell he signed those is way beyond me. But remember last week, this would be good to repeat it, because, Jalene, you didn't, maybe you saw it, but that here is this this article in Yahoo News again. Those craving for change now look to the Republicans. Now, for one thing, there's probably somewhere in the range of 5 to 8% of people that are going to actually change their vote. Again, if the Republicans win big time, it's simply going to be because Democratic voters stay home. It's not because all of a sudden, you know, 100 million people said, "I can't stand those socialists in Washington."
Yeah, right.
It's going to be about 5 or 8% that figure. Well, the Democrats didn't do it. I might as well try the Republicans.
Oh, jeez.
Right.
So, wrong answer.
So nothing will happen. Everything will become confused and awful. And by 2012, this probably will assure, if all things being equal, the re-election of Barack Obama. This could be, in a weird way, politically a boon.
Yeah, it's
for,
true.
For him.
Thought about
very,
that.
But anyway, so they're all saying about nearly 2 years after putting Obama in the White House, one quarter of those who voted for the Democrat are defecting to the GOP, the Grand Oil Party, or considering voting against the party in power this fall. Just half of them say they'll definitely show up. So these are kind of confusing figures. But here's the important part. Yet in a reflection of broad dissatisfaction with politics, just as many people who back Republican presidential John McCain are either supporting Democrats now or still considering how to vote.
Ooh.
So this is a wash, and it all depends pretty much on turnout. But also it depends, and maybe all this big money doesn't mean anything, because here you have this extraordinarily rich woman, Meg Whitman, trying to unseat Barbara Boxer. And she has spent $160 million, and she's 8% percentage points down in the...
She's going down more every day.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, she had that little snafu with her illegal immigrant.
Oh, yeah. I don't think people care about that.
Well, I think that the Hispanic population sure does, Peter.
Here's the way it's going. We just need the headlines. Top corporations aid U.S. Chamber of Commerce campaign, which is spending tens of millions of dollars with attack ads against Democrats. Big gifts to Republicans push donor to new level. They're just talking about these ultra wealthy people just dropping like $7 million on the Republicans, and billionaires bankrolling the Tea Party. The Koch brothers, these two right-wing whack jobs, and on and on and
on.
Yeah,
they've been trying to kind of stay undercover, those Koch brothers, but they're being exposed for the creeps they are.
And then you have these absolutely insane teabaggers that have managed to get the nomination from O'Connell and up in Alaska.
O'Donnell.
O'Donnell. What did I say?
Yeah, O'Connell. It's okay.
I don't
it's
know
all right.
Who the hell she
all
is.
Right. I just like to clarify.
I didn't know this. This is Michigan's gain was Alaska's loss. The Michigan militia founder, Narm Olson, he went up to Alaska, and he's part of the Drop Zone Security Services protecting Alaska Republican candidate Joe Miller.
I've read about this.
Yeah, so thinks that there shouldn't be a minimum wage and all of this stuff.
Yeah, another sweetheart.
None of these Tea Party people believe in global warming. And increasingly, the tea bagger leaders are being tied into these white racist parties. I'm not talking about the average bagger, although you know, not too many people any longer are going to proudly say, I'm a racist.
Well, I think they...
But that's who they're drawing support
yeah.
from. But here's what I want to ask people. Any of you baggers or just any of you Republicans, given the fact that the Chamber of Commerce has interests of these big corporations, in fact, it's being paid, essentially, to promote the interests of these big corporations and these financial institutions, all the people that have either caused and or are benefiting from what's going on, do you really, really believe that they have any concern for your interests whatsoever? Anything smaller than their world of...
On any level. Yeah, throw it out. We're here.
Personal, cultural, political. I've said this before. I mean, somebody that lives like in Jolene's neighborhood or somebody that lives in Southgate or East Point or something like that, good, solid working class districts that are actually going to vote for some of these people or the equivalent in other states... I mean, you really are just cannon fodder for these people and their interests. These Koch brothers, who apparently they're just nuts.
They're completely nuts.
Because one of the things is they could go for the whole liberal program and high taxes and taxes on their corporation, and they'd still be billionaires. I mean, they got so many billions. It's like their hobby.
They're just throwing it around.
Yeah, and they don't want...
Politically.
And they're backing the tea baggers. I mean, these billionaires are backing this...
Billionaire baggers.
Billionaire baggers. Wow.
Gary.
All right. Oh, I want to get this man on the air right now, and I'll leave it up to him whether he wants to give his last name. It's Greg calling from Royal Oak, and he's doing something. Greg, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you for my call.
You are a peacenik.
Peacenik is the name of the nonprofit organization I started.
And that's N-I-C-K.
N-I-C-K, it's a play on the word peacenik, which was N-I-K, but my little boy is named Nicholas, and that picture, which is used on our logo, it was just an accidental picture I took of him, and I thought it was great with the thumbs up. So
love it.
So you guys are doing stuff. Tell us what's going to be happening on October 30th.
Well, we're kind of piggybacking with John Stewart's rally to restore the sanity. To give you a brief introduction of Peacenik, what we are is a Michigan nonprofit that I started, and our mission statement is promoting peace through education, poverty reduction, environmental protections, and social justice. And our objective is to raise funds and awareness for other nonprofits and charities that fall under the scope of one of those mission statements.
That's great. Go ahead. You've got an event going. In fact, let me see. How is it? 8 hours more?
Well, we're going to start at noon because the rally in D.C. is noon to 3, and we're going to live stream it and show it on a movie screen. And then afterwards, we'll have discussion and speakers, and we might show a documentary or two.
This is the Phoenix in Hazel Park on John R.
That's right.
Yeah.
Phoenix Cafe. Just south of 10 Mile on John R.
And then beginning at 8 o'clock, there's going to be music and art display. And your band, The Insurgency, is going to play?
That's right.
Yeah.
And there's a host of other bands, all great music. So, yeah, everyone come on out and enjoy. And if you can, come on out for the discussion. What we need is some real discussion instead of this insanity that's going on with this Tea Party. And, I mean, there is no discussion. It's so divisive and just ad hominem attacks, and we need to sit down and discuss and talk about issues and really, you know, like you said earlier, do you really think that they're looking after you? Or
Yeah, no, they're looking after their own, the people that are, well, what's the old phrase? He who pays the piper calls the tune, and it's the ultra-rich billionaires that are calling the tune for the teabaggers, and that's what's going to occur. They're going to essentially get mainstream Republicans in there that that want less regulation, like for the Coke industry, so they can do more environmental damage with their energy industries and what have you. Also, though, let's get back a little to this rally to restore sanity. Yours has a political character to it, which I completely agree with, and I'm pleased to have, by the way, to have a link to PEACENIC, which is PEACENIC.org on my website, peterwerby.com. But John Stewart says this is not a political rally. But what I don't understand. What's he going to do there?
I'm not really sure either. That's what we're looking forward to viewing and watching.
Yeah, and I think the idea of some documentaries and some discussion is good. So that's terrific, and I think this kind of effort is important, because one thing you have to give it to the Tea Party is they're organized. I mean, sure, they've had this this influx of billions of dollars, but the real movements in this country that have occurred, since the anti-slavery movement began in the 1830s, 1840s, has always been generated at a grassroots level, an authentic grassroots level. They, you know, they call the teabaggers are essentially what they call an astroturf movement. It gives the appearance of a natural movement, but in fact, what's going on is they're being funded by these ultra wealthy right wingers. So,
right. And stoking their emotions. And
yeah. So let's go over one more time. Saturday, October 30th, the group peacenic.org, and it's with a K, so it's like peacenic.org, and there's also a Facebook page for it as well. There's going to be a rally to restore sanity. It's going to mirror the one that John Stewart is holding in Washington, D.C. It's going to be at the Phoenix Cafe. That's 24918 John R. in Hazel Park. What's the mile road there?
10 mile.
Okay.
Just south of 10 mile.
I've never been there, but I'm going to check it out. I will definitely stop by.
Well, that'll be great.
And I'd like to see get some night call listeners there as well. You can, if you've missed all of this, you can either go to peacenic.org or my website, peterwerby, W-E-R-B-E.com. Well, Greg, thank you so much. It'll be a pleasure to come out there and shake your hand.
Well, thank you. And thank you so much, Julian and Peter, for being voices of reason, which we have so little of.
All right, Greg. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye now. So that's the kind of thing you can do all by yourself. You don't need these rich guys pushing you along for essentially their interest, because they're playing you for fools. Let me tell you that. Because again, we would open up the lines at 313-298-WRIF, and if you can tell me how these rich Republicans that are backing the teabag movement are going to actually work for the interests of the common person in our communities, we want to hear it.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Do people sometimes describe you as a saver? A bit frugal? Penny-wise and somewhat thrifty?
You know, cheap.
If that sounds like you, you're going to love the newest addition to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com.
Coupon crazy!
At MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, you'll still find great gift certificates for local businesses with goods and services on sale for more than half off. Find money-saving online coupons that you can download right now and start saving immediately. Log on to MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com and save big.
With online coupons from Autolab USA, with over 20 locations in the Metro Detroit area and a 12,000-mile, 12-month warranty. Hagopian Rug Care Center with 5 locations in Metro Detroit. They're the leader in carpet, rug, furniture, and tile cleaning.
If you're looking for ways to enjoy life and stay within your budget, then go
coupon crazy
now at MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com. That's MotorCitySteelsAndDeals.com, your online home for great ways to save big at local Michigan businesses.
feels like time's running out. Maxed out on your credit cards, collection calls are coming every day, and you're two payments behind on your mortgage. You need help. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. Call 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
You're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
Another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust. And another one gone. And another one gone. Another one bites the dust. Hey.
Hey, another one bites the dust. We're talking about Clarence Thomas, Justice of the Supreme Court, his whack job teabagger wife. Yeah, Virginia. Now, a number of people have said, including Greg from peacenick.org, that there's too much ad hominem, which means, you know, attacking the man, literally from Latin. And I do that all the time. I don't apologize. This isn't NPR. You know. So. Most people don't even know this. Justice Clarence Thomas was appointed by George W. Bush, by senior. What those
H-W.
Are
H.W.
H.W., yeah. To replace, who was it now? Was it Thurgood Marshall? I think so. The pioneering NAACP attorney, one of the better justices that ever served with this really diminished intellect of Clarence Thomas. And it was almost cynical. They wanted to replace one African-American justice with another, and the African-American community in the United States is overwhelmingly liberal, and they get this far-right-winger.
This far-right-wing perv.
Perv, as it turns out. Now, he was accused. In 1991, there were these hearings as to whether he was fit to serve on the court. And this this woman who had worked with him, Anita Hill, said that he was always making these sexual jokes. He was always describing porn films like Long Dong Silver.
Oh, my gosh. I forgot about that.
And then it was also he cracked a joke about a pubic hair on a can of Coke.
I remember this.
And she, Anita Hill, was just pillared by the right wing particularly. And finally is that Clarence Thomas was approved just by this narrow margin. And actually the person responsible for having him not be rejected. Why are you laughing?
Sorry. I was going to make a bad joke about he was approved by a little,
yeah,
just
never
a
mind.
Little hair.
Never mind. Approved by a hair. Right. Was Senator Joseph Biden, who refused to allow any women to testify to corroborate what Anita Hill said about Clarence Thomas being this sexual perv that did sexual harassment all the time, because he said you could only testify if you were a if you were involved in an employment situation with him.
Mm.
Now, his companion at the time was a woman whose name was Lillian McEwen, and she's now retired. She's been a prosecutor, defense attorney, very, very well established. And he said that Clarence Thomas always pressed her for dates, made lurid sexual references, and the ones that Anita Hill charged him with rang familiar, she said. He was always watching the women he worked with to see if they were potential partners. He was obsessed with porn.
He was also obsessed with women with huge, huge breasts. Not just huge, huge, huge.
It says, he asked one woman about her bra size. McEwen recalled him telling her. So what this is, and of course, Clarence Thomas denied every little bit of this. Well, how did it come out? This is so insane because his teabagging wife, who seems so inappropriate that she is involved in this particular organization.
When her husband sits on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, and it is funded by these secret donations of up to $500,000 from these corporate concerns.
Which her husband made sure could remain secret.
Yeah, and Clarence Thomas goes to these meetings, these seminars that are sponsored by the Koch brothers.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So Ginny Thomas.
Go ahead.
Well, she gave old Anita a call one morning.
And left a voicemail message.
And said she asked her to consider an apology and pray about this. And, okay, have a good day.
Yeah, I just wanted to reach across the airwaves and the years and ask you to consider something. I would love you to consider an apology sometime and some full explanation of why you did what you did with my husband. So give it some thought and certainly pray about this and come to understand why you did what you did. Okay? Have a good day.
Ooh.
This is sicko.
It really is. And now look how long it's been. Why now? What?
And it's fundamentally stupid.
It is.
I mean, why
would
she...
a drunk dial.
Why? That's what I think. Why would she resurrect this? Well, here's what I think. They ought to consider impeachment proceedings against Justice Thomas because he lied his ass off.
He did.
Because he was a sexual perv.
Listen, the perv part's fine, but lying about being a perv.
Yeah. He was a regular, this is Clarence, at a DuPont Circle shop that offered pornographic films. And his companion at the time, Lillian McEwen, said the owner of the store stocked Clarence's preferences behind the counter.
Oh, God.
Why? And you know how much this will derail the right wingers? Zero.
Zero.
They don't care. Somebody, what
happened
to that?
Do you want me to read the...
Oh, yeah.
What you got?
Yeah.
Oh, email. Pauline, Peter, the last couple of commercials that she has seen from Rick Snyder, we were talking about that, say how he will deregulate business and cut their taxes to bring business back to Michigan. This is just what we need. Think how wonderful it has worked since Reagan started it. Just my two cents. Thanks, Peter.
There you go. Hey, what somebody wanted to know, and they said, you're going to write a book on Arthur Penhallow?
No.
This was on Facebook.
Now, Arthur Penhallow said that he's bored and he needs something to do, so someone said, write a book, and I said I would help edit it.
Arthur Penhallow used to, for years, the longest afternoon drive DJ in American radio history.
Right here. Yeah.
Our friend, our colleague. And are you listening, Art? He's probably, I hope he's doing more than just sitting at home watching
He's got his
Oprah.
Cat. He's got the cat.
During that time.
He's still rocking, I'm sure.
All right. Let's see. Hey, by the way, there's a number of people that are listed. You can get on the air, but he's blatant use of teabagger name and makes these people angry. This is what the people originally said. They originally said they had to have another tea party, and then they used that as a verb. They said, we have to teabag all of these liberal politicians.
Yes. We didn't make this up.
We didn't make this up. And one of the other things is any number of people in American history that have taken the names of sort of insults and like the know-nothings in the like 18, I can't remember when that was, 1840s, 18, maybe 1840s or someplace like that. And perhaps best example is what used to be this terrible insult for gay people were queers.
Yeah.
And gay people
have co-opted that
and said they're queers. So rather than getting mad and wanting to be called the Tea Party rather than a bunch of teabaggers, just suck it up.
Take it like a real bagger.
Yeah. Man up.
Man up. That's a good one, isn't it?
Teabaggers.
Bag up.
And come on, you teabaggers, man.
Lighten up.
You got this whole network financed by these corporate billionaires. You've got all these insane talk show hosts, that spout out this right-wing corporate crapperoo that you suck up and parrot off to make the rich people richer. You're just their tools, you know.
As you drool, we could go on and on all night.
we got a couple hours here. Give it to us, all right?
Yeah.
Let's see. Here's Stan in Sterling Heights. Stan, it's Peter and Jolene. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. How you doing?
Good. How you doing, Jolene?
You got your opinions on Republicans, you know what?
But
this is the United States of America. You can do that.
Well, that's right.
Guess what?
I give up.
Democrats, Republicans, whatever, they're all useless.
What would you do? Are you going to vote at all? Are you going to be one of the state? I'm not criticizing you, but a lot of people, most people stay home. So the majority of people don't vote for anybody.
Well, if you don't get out and vote, guess what? You can't have an opinion, so I vote.
Who are you going to vote for? What party?
I haven't quite decided yet.
Yeah.
I think how about Werby and Jordan?
doesn't ring. Doesn't have much of a ring.
The point is look what the Democrats have done. Zilch, zero, nothing. What have they done?
They actually have done a few things.
They have done quite a few things, but what they haven't done is solve the larger economic problems, because the larger economic problems are so big that they would have to really have radical and almost socialist kind of solutions. I mean, there's two ways to do it. Kind of like that, or you could go to the what set us off in this direction in the first place, which would be deregulation and give the market a free hand, which means every time the market under capitalism has had a free hand, it has been destructive to the economy as a whole and awful. A complete disaster for the population, which means you and me. So we don't want to go that. So we can either go right wing, which is what all the corporate bosses of the teabaggers want, and that's what they're really all about. Or we can leave things as they are and just kind of go along with the Democrats, who are a little bit better in a lot of ways than the Republicans. Or we can go totally red. I mean, I don't know if there's any third way. All right. Thank you very much, Dan. I appreciate that. Here's Chris in Dearborn Heights. Hey, Chris, you're on the air. Go ahead.
What's happening, Peter?
Oh, a little of this, a little of that.
Well, officially, I do not agree with your teabagger statement, but I have a question for you.
Sure.
Who is Adam Gadan, and who is Osama bin Laden?
What?
Oh, Adam's the new spokesperson for Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, the guy that...
Osama bin Forgotten.
Yeah, right. Osama bin Laden. I thought you said his last name differently. Well, we know who they are.
Sorry, I didn't mean to answer for you, Peter.
Yeah.
Adam Gadan and Osama bin Laden.
Yeah, right. These are guys that are trying to encourage domestic terrorism. Even in Detroit, the last guy said, that
he's encouraging people from Detroit to, within the United States.
Yeah. Okay, got that settled.
To me, it's pretty clear that Osama bin Laden has been dead for the past 10 years.
Yeah.
And Adam Gadan is nothing but a CIA implant.
Wow.
He is from the United States.
Yeah.
That's correct.
So what do you think this is all about?
Regarding war on terrorism?
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. What is terrorism?
Wait a minute. Let's
what's with the questions?
We're doing 20 questions. Give me your opinion. What do you think?
What is terrorism?
What's going on? You say this is
very bad.
A false flag, as it's called.
You're leading us somewhere. Go ahead.
Go on. Give us the conclusion.
Well, terrorism can be stopped tomorrow.
How do you do that?
Easy. Stop funding Israel.
Well, Osama bin Laden says that there are three things that the reason that he is, whether he's alive or dead or who's ever spoken for him. One of them is the financing of Israel to the detriment of the Palestinians. The second thing are U.S. troops and U.S. aid to Saudi Arabia. And the third thing is the continuing wars in the Muslim world. Well, I'll tell you, I would be all about, and you don't have to be any left-winger for this, because, again, Ron Paul, the Republican, the Libertarian, the candidate for president, he has said to dismantle all these foreign bases, including the ones in Saudi Arabia. He says end these wars. And I'll bet you that there's not, if this got up to a vote, whether we were going to continue to give hundreds of billions of dollars, not just to Israel, but to Egypt and Jordan and Indonesia and all these corrupt regimes that we're wasting our taxpayer dollars on, I don't think it would get, they'd be lucky if they got 10% of the vote. So there you go. All right. Thank you very much, Chris. I appreciate your call. Here's John calling from Dexter, Michigan. Hi, John. You're on the air. Hey, John.
Peter, how are you?
Good.
I'm in Dexter, but I'm just leaving the Pink Floyd concert, which was a fantastic show.
Roger Waters. How great was it?
Three times as good as any of the best concerts I've ever seen.
That's saying a lot.
Better than Queen, better than the Rolling Stones.
Wow. Very nice. Lucky you.
We couldn't do it. We
had anyways, hey, last time I talked to Peter Werby was 25 years ago, so you've been around a while.
Yeah, we were both 20 or that's 15.
Right. Yeah. Hey, I totally and absolutely disagree with you. You guys, why would you side with the left? They've got more millionaires. They've got more corrupt, rich people that you hate.
Deciding with the right's better? Answer that.
First off, among the left, they characteristically support the Republican Party. But what are they doing it for? If you have wealthy people, like, say, the Hollywood millionaires that aren't even billionaires, what they're doing is they're motivated by some concept of peace, of social justice, of what have you, that they think the Democratic Party represents. The Democratic Party also supports the corporate state and corporate interests, to be sure. It also has a social program because it has to represent the liberal aspirations of its base. But like all of my family are all these liberal Democrats, and they're always disappointed in when somebody like Bill Clinton signs NAFTA, signs the Telecommunications Act, signs any number of Republican-sponsored bills. So there is a difference in terms of what the desires are of each party. But I mean, ultimately, do they both have a corporate agenda? Yeah. But what the Republicans have a corporate agenda with no social agenda, whatsoever.
Simply a corporate agenda.
Yeah. But let me ask you this. Why do you go to see Roger Waters? He's a leftist. He's a big-time leftist.
Oh, I could not believe all the leftist messages in that concert. But you know,
hello.
But you still liked it. Yay!
I love the music. But listen, hey, you and your friends and your family are going to be waiting around a long time because if you buy into the left agenda like I think you do,
you think?
A long time,
wait a minute. I wrote the left agenda. What do you mean if I buy into it?
And in fact, left, we're so far left, we fall off of the agenda.
Off.
Off the scale.
Well, actually, what?
So we're better than the left.
There's going to be, I don't know if you want to bother to stay up till 1:30 in the morning. I hope you and others do. But there is I've interviewed a guy, a labor lawyer from Chicago. And he's written a book called Maybe You Were Born on the Wrong Continent. And he has a big case for essentially what is social democracy. That is a government that takes care of its people, that doesn't have the highest percentage of poor people in the country, that doesn't have that has free universities instead of average college debt rose to 24,000 in 2009, that isn't fighting wars all over the world all the time, that isn't having these acrimonious disputes continually and what have you. Well, okay, you no answer, we'll move on. 313-298-WRIF. Let's see, where is our next, this is Gary in Shelby Township. Gary, hi, you're on the air.
Mr. Peter Werby, I don't know if you happen to remember me back from the good old Bittersweet Alley days.
BSA, man, sure.
Exactly, yeah, I'm listening to you, and I'm not sure if either I smoked too much or you smoked too much a long time ago, but I totally disagree with everything you're saying. But I'm
well, wait a minute, man. So
are you talking cigs or are you talking blunts, man?
Well, one thing, Gary, you're an oddity then in the world of rock and roll because there are some maybe notable right-wing rockers. But if you ever noticed, rock and roll and the people that are the performers are overwhelmingly left-wing.
Yeah, because I see a lot of these rock and rollers and the entertainers and all these people which made their money from capitalism going out there saying, we need to do this for the people and this for the people.
Oh, God, what terrible folks.
Yeah.
No, because
how dare they?
It's so easy to say, oh, we should take care of everyone. But, first of all, show me a society, and don't say Sweden because they have like 9 million people, that have had true socialism work. It doesn't. It falls.
Well, I mean, I've got some guy on the air if you want to call that socialism. I mean, Germany does not have socialism, to be sure. It's a capitalist economy that has a political system called social democracy, where by law you're required to have like in the big corporations, you have to have the representatives of the workers on the corporate boards. And what happens is no one's going to, they're not going to say, oh, well, we each ought to get $400,000 a piece from the production line at Mercedes-Benz and bankrupt the country. They're responsible part of it. But what's, we're heading back, Gary, to the 19th century. Wages are being driven down. I mean, the whole agenda of the Republican right is to destroy unions, what's left of them. The 7% of private enterprise that's still organized into unions, because that's going to be the last leg that's holding up a wage structure that's built a middle class. So middle class, bye bye.
So let me ask you: do you think this the health care plan, the TARP, and all that? Do you agree with all those things?
Well, the TARP, of course, was put into place under Bush and was necessary, as I said at the beginning of the show, because they had been allowed to grow to too big to fail. And if they hadn't been bailed out, they probably would have collapsed. Of course, Bush did not put the kind of proper regulation on the TARP funds, and we had that obscene spectacle of his pals in the finance industry getting these huge bonuses and what have you, and they've made out like bandits. The bandits they are. They're banksters. But what was really needed was intense regulation. That if you're going to have capitalism, when you don't have intense regulation on capitalism, you are like the 19th century. People work 12 and 14 hours a day. They work 6 and 7 days a week. There's no Social Security. There's no Medicare. There's nothing like that.
And the health care?
The health care, what we should have had was we should have cut the military budget by about two-thirds to begin with and used that money to have a single-payer national health program that pays for everybody's health care like in every other industrial country in the world.
So weak at best.
Yeah.
Weak at best.
Let me hear Britain. Here, Britain, which is plans to have its deepest cuts to spending in 60 years, including a little bit for the military. But with all of this, the National Health Service, one of the most politically delicate institutions in Britain, will be allocated more money rather than less. And the reason that is because that's a foundation of British society, that you don't have 40,000 people a year dying for lack of medical care like you have in this country. You don't have people going broke and bankrupt because of medical costs. You don't have something like Michigan Blue Cross skimming and scamming and costing you and me hundreds and maybe even thousands of dollars more a year.
Our healthcare system is broken because of the expense. And so what the Obama administration has done is added more people, the amount of people that are in Canada, 30 million people he's added to our healthcare system because he's trying to just push this through and then fix it later. You don't fix a problem by adding something to something that's already broken. Lower the cost so people can afford it.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I'm not quite sure how you should do it. I mean, I just think that ought to be something that people don't make billions off of our illness. I mean, the medical plan I have winds up that these companies, not only, that they do everything bad that every other big healthcare company does, but they also take this money that we're giving them and they invest it. So they're also part of this big scam. All right, listen, I gotta go, but listen up. I want to read a letter on the air, and this is from Scott, who lives in Sweden. He said, I know I don't need to tell you, but I hear these all this anger about socialism. Clearly, these sheep dips are so historically interested that they should lose their citizenship. No one should be that stupid. Scott, who's writing from Sweden, you can write us, too. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He says the worst thing about their wasted brain cells is not the damage that they cause to themselves by going through life not seeing clearly, but the damage they will cause everyone else. If these, I got to say this right, if these fumduckers want to see socialism, let them come here to Sweden and stay long enough to see quality of life is better and far, far more equitable and has damned little to do with Marxism. At most, it's simply intelligent regulation guided by fraternity, not profit.
And they are the happiest country in the world. Remember that?
Yeah. All right. 313-298-WRIF. Let's see. Here is Joey in South Lyon. Hey, Joey, you're on the air.
Hey, what's going on, big time?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. Yourself?
Good.
I got a question to ask you.
Sure.
Hey, so like, you, so you don't like the rich people, right?
The what?
The
you
rich.
Don't like the rich people.
Well, here's what we say. Listen. Let's eat the rich.
But we're really secretly millionaires.
Yeah, we are. Because we're in media, so we have more
loads.
Money than God. No, anyways, no, it's not that we don't like it. It's not a matter of not liking the rich.
It's about the corporations controlling everything and the people getting nothing.
And there's also, can you imagine billionaires trying to destroy the wage structure of workers by eliminating their unions? I mean, these are evil people.
No, it's we'll discuss, you know. It's no bad. You know, you got your people that make movies. They make millions.
Movies. Oh, movies, yeah. Yeah, but they're usually, with a few of them, they're usually liberals. They get the sense.
Like Johnny Knoxville, for example, came to, he's a good liberal. I'm sure he came to Detroit and did that documentary, Detroit Lives. Guy's a gazillionaire.
Right.
But he still has a heart.
I probably make even considerably less than a lot of you think. But at one point, when I actually had some, actually I wasn't as lazy as I usually am. I thought, man, I could wind up making millions. And the first thing I thought about wasn't I was going to be able to get this car and buy, you know, $20,000 this and that.
Yeah.
I was thinking, boy, if I started making millions, who in the world could, what kind of environmental group could I have?
Oh, yeah.
Boy, I bet you there's a peace group or a local soup kitchen that could be helped.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Julene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
This is Matt Demmer from Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury. I'm here to tell you that now it's more important than ever to buy an American-made vehicle. We at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury are still in the business of leasing and want to help you. Whether you're looking for the hot new Lincoln MKS, the sleek Lincoln MKZ, or the hottest crossover vehicle, the Lincoln MKX, Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury in Dearborn is your one-stop shop. At our dealership, we believe in honesty, reliability, and support for our customers just like you. We encourage you to check out our virtual showroom on our website, Demmer.com. You can check out our vehicle inventory, and you can bet that if we don't have the vehicle you're in the market for, we'll do our very best to get it for you. While you're online, we invite you to get a no-obligation internet price quote. Whether you come into our newly renovated dealership or visit us online, we at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury invite you to experience the Demmer difference today. We're located on Michigan Avenue just east of Oakwood in Dearborn. Give us a call today, 313-274-8800. That's 313-274-8800. Or check us out on the web at Demmer.com.
That's the sound of people throwing out their old dehumidifiers. They've replaced them with the energy-saving Wave Ventilation Unit. Wave Ventilation expels moisture, gases, and toxins trapped in your basement or crawl space and replaces it with drier, fresher air. The computerized Wave Ventilation requires no maintenance. There are no buckets to empty, no filters to change. And compared to a dehumidifier, it will save you hundreds of dollars a year in energy costs. One customer wrote,
I was stunned by the difference. I had a dehumidifier for almost 20 years without ever getting rid of that musty smell. And now that smell is finally gone.
Wave can transform your home into a drier, healthier environment. Satisfaction guaranteed. Find out more about Wave Ventilation right now.
For free information, go to goodairnow.com. That's goodairnow.com. Or call 1-866-324-9481. That's 1-866-324-9481.
Yes. 101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
I want to hear the revolution! I want to hear the revolution!
Peter and Jolene, you're listening to Night Call, the Ritz award-winning talk show on 101 WRIF.
All right, welcome back. It's our second hour, 313-298-WRIF. And, people listen to this show, and they say, everybody in Detroit a right winger? And no, I know it's not true. I mean, I think what usually what happens is, in fact, I like this better. Remember,
when we stimulate them to call.
When Jalene and I used to do this nationally syndicated talk show, and we mostly had just liberal callers.
Our sheeple.
I find it, I hate to say it, but I found it a little, well, let me put it another way. I didn't find it quite as exciting.
Well, yeah. Well, it's nice to have a little bit of discourse.
Right. Oh man, where is this? Oh, here it is. Okay, I'm sorry. If you go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, PeterWerbe.com, you can see the authors that are going to be on at 1 a.m. Eastern Time. And first up is going to be Julie Holland. She's a psychiatrist, a doctor. She's written the pot book.
Now, this is for the guy who called and said he didn't know if you smoked too much or him back in the 60s.
There you go, Gary. Yeah.
Enjoy.
Yeah. The Pot Book, A Complete Guide to Cannabis, Its Role in Medicine, Politics, Science, and Culture. She debunks the myths surrounding marijuana usage. And then it says on my website, how about a little socialism or a lot? Thomas Gagan, which, boy, it sure doesn't look like that. Got a lot more letters in there than needed. Thomas Gagan. Tom Gagan is attorney and author. Were You Born on the Wrong Continent? How the European Model Can Help You Get a Life. He says the U.S. should turn to the model of European social democracy to solve our social and economic problems. Also, a lot of stuff about the WikiLeaks, 400,000 pages of just more evidence of Bush war crimes. Why is this guy, instead of opening a library, why isn't he in the International Court of Justice? Mm-hmm. But it's the biggest document leak in history. It exposes the real war, and there's lots of links on my website. And if you ever had any thought of supporting that war, this ought to be enough to disabuse you of that. And remember, though, for the next one. Remember for the next one. Okay?
Because there will be one.
Yeah.
Or two. Or three.
In Avatar, which you saw, right?
Peter, I have not seen the whole thing.
Okay. Well, how could you see a little of it? But anyway,
fall asleep.
Oh. In Avatar, there's the hero of it is this U.S. Marine vet who was paralyzed in the U.S. war against Venezuela. So when that comes up, whether it's in a year, 5 years, or 10 years, some of you are listening in your teens, when it comes up in 30 years. Remember, guys, remember some show back in the first part of the century.
Oh, hippie.
Okay. you?
Yeah.
But there's so much, that story, how the U.S. ignored torture. There's just so much on this site. 15,000 previously unlisted deaths. Leaked Pentagon files contain records of more than 100,000 fatalities, including 66,000 civilians. This is all in these WikiLeaks. So that's worth
on our Facebook page, which keep on pushing
it.
Facebook.com/nightcall. We've added some photos, I want to say. Peter, a picture of you in Cuba, a couple of pictures of you in Cuba.
Yeah.
And but I asked the listeners this week what they thought the most important story was, and a lot of people thought that was the one right there, the WikiLeaks.
Oh, the WikiLeaks, mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's one, and hey, Hank and Ken and Rudy and Nick, stay on the line. I'll get you on. But this was in, what day was it? Oh, October 20th, so that's a few days ago. Mm-hmm. The Jimmy John's restaurants in Minneapolis are known for serving attitude with their sandwiches, but recently the employees at the 10 shops in that city have started to exude more attitude than management would like. Some of the 200 workers wear T-shirts that say, "Wages so low, you'll freak," and many are backing a campaign to unionize the shops, which compete with Subway and Quiznos.
Unionization
drive is one of the few efforts to organize fast food workers in American history. Employees will vote Friday, which was last Friday. If the union wins, organizers say they will seek to unionize fast food workers in other cities. The issues that have roused the Jimmy John's workers are typical of what many low-end service sector workers face, earning the 7.25 an hour minimum wage or slightly above that, working unpredictable and often short shifts and dealing with bosses' wraths when they call in sick. Now, look who is organizing them. The old IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, also known as the Wobblies.
Right.
Then why they're called the Wobblies is lost in distant history. You can go to IWW.org. It's a very radical union. And it was, and still is, a swaggering radical union, says the New York Times, with 100,000 members, with legendary leaders like Mother Jones. There's a magazine named after her. Big Bill Haywood. I like the language here. The union often clashed with police officers and Pinkerton security guards as it organized lumberjacks, dock workers, and miners. Well, whenever you see clashed, that means the police attacked them. Forget this clash stuff.
Maybe a little tear gas.
Now they only have 1,600 members. But here, the vote is in. A group of employees at 10 Jimmy John's sandwich shops in Minneapolis have narrowly failed to pass a vote to form what would have been a rare union of fast food restaurant workers. A.O. Collins, a delivery driver who helped organize the union vote, said Friday 85 employees voted for the union, 87 voted against it. Talk about close.
I wonder how what the pressure was on those 87.
The owners of the 10 restaurants strongly opposed the effort. Well, I don't think it was entirely, but here, the pressure, but I'll get to that. They need a majority of it. Collins says he believed the organizing drive failed because too many workers were worried it could have put their jobs at risk. He said union supporters will continue to meet in Strata. Yeah, because they find ways to fire people and what have you. Even at, talk about blackmail, even about 7.25. But here.
Or closing stores like Walmart did in Canada.
Now here is, here are some of the people that were opposed to the unionization of Jimmy John's. Neil Bailey, 29. He's worked 6 years at Jimmy John's. He makes $8 an hour.
I mean,
how can you live on $16,000?
Peter, I know someone who works at Jimmy John's in Novi.
Yeah, well, they might be an advertiser. Let's not go.
I don't know how she's doing. She probably has roommates.
He opposed the union. Here's why. I'm worried they won't advocate for a wage increase. What? That they'll advocate for profit sharing or health care, which sadly the employer can't provide because it would be far too expensive. Let's just leave it there. I'm worried the union would be happy to force a strike, and I don't believe that this is a desirable outcome if you're working on behalf of the workforce. You know, when you have a union, you vote whether you have a strike or not. Stephen Smith, a 42-year-old meat cutter who earns $8.35 an hour after 3 years, also opposes the union. He said it would be difficult for Mr. Mulligan, the owner, to pay much more than the minimum wage because his competitors generally pay the same amount.
How much
do you expect to get paid for making a bologna sandwich or cutting a pickle in half, Mr. Smith said. This is not right. So, here.
Brainwashed.
Now, I mentioned just a little while ago in this, talking about this organizing effort. It was being organized by the IWW, the Wobblies, the Industrial Workers of the World. And they go back to 1905. And they had newspaper. They had a newspaper in the Finnish language up in was distributed. It was either, it might have been daily, but I think it was weekly. 30,000 copies, let's say a week, in 1912.
That's pretty amazing.
In northern Michigan, northern Wisconsin, and northern Minnesota. And they were big. And so they had a cartoon character in their paper called Mr. Block. And Mr. Block, and he just was like a blockhead. And he always opposed, he was a worker, but he always opposed unionization. And someone writing about him said, Mr. Block is legion. Mr. Block owns nothing, yet he speaks from the standpoint of the millionaire. He licks the hand that smites him and kisses the boot that kicks him. The personification of all that a worker should not be. And this is when you hear Neil Bailey and Stephen Smith, who make no more than $8.35 an hour, and they vote against a union, and they start making the parroting the same arguments that a boss puts forward. We're talking the Stockholm syndrome here,
right? Yeah, really sad.
Yeah. I mean, all right. Let's go on. In fact, here's somebody that wants to talk about it. Here's Ken and Warren. Ken, hi. It's Peter and Jalene. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me. How are you doing?
Good. Excellent.
Good. The one thing that I wanted to ask you about, you said that unions are good for wages, right?
Well, yeah,
so we got a president who's pro-union. We've got Congress that's pro-union. They've had time to do whatever they want to do. The unions haven't been this powerful probably since Carter. So can you show me that wages have gone up? Give me a source that says wages have gone up.
Well, one of the things they've done is that 95% of the people in the United States have gotten a tax break because of the Obama bill.
No, I'm asking about wages.
Oh, wages. No, they haven't. And one of the things, of course, that's that's impeded that is the Republicans and a few conservative Democrats' refusal to entertain language that could, in fact, raise wages. I mean,
well, you see, the thing is, we have more unions have more power now than they did when the Bush administration.
Well, they do. They have some influence. Listen, if it wasn't for the unions, Obama probably wouldn't even be elected. But the unions always get screwed. The union here's the union platform. You can hear it. You go to any union rally. I go to a lot of them, and they're saying we can't let those horrible Republicans get in because they'll screw the working man. Which, of course, is true. They have no interest in the average working person from Warren or anywhere else. But one of the but when it comes to actually passing legislation that a Democratic Congress, as you correctly say, Ken, that will help the average working person, it never happens, does it?
Yeah, you say it never happened, but they can pass anything. They had 2 years when the Republicans couldn't block them at all.
Well, no, they when? When was that? Now?
50% in the Senate and sent it to Obama to sign it. It's not a Republican thing.
Well, I'll tell you, the bills that came up were just either, I don't know. I mean, let me ask you this. The Democrats are an abysmal failure when it comes to putting across the union agenda, which really affects all working people, isn't just for union members. So I think that's, I agree with that. But what are you saying? What's your point?
What I'm saying is, you say they failed. They didn't fail. They just, you're saying they didn't do it. Well, they didn't do it then. But they can't fail. They're a majority. The majority in the House and Senate with the Republican.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Well, first off, they were able to block for this union.
They filibustered every single thing.
They filibustered everything. And you have these conservative Democrats that might as well be in the Republican Party. People like Blanche Lincoln from Arkansas and what's his name from Colorado and all of that. So it is pretty weak. I mean, when Obama got elected, I didn't think things were going to dramatically change. I mean, I think that he's hamstrung by the nature of the institution, by the nature of the economy, by the history of this country. But are you saying that things would work out better if there would have been Republicans in?
Well, you see, I'm asking you about the wage increase. You haven't shown me any.
No, I told you I agree with you on that, that the unions have spent hundreds of millions of dollars over the last, say, 50 years or so on supporting Democratic candidates, and they've gotten pretty precious little in return. So what do you say?
So
that's what I'm saying. So what are you saying?
Failed to push the union agenda, and that's why it's the Democrats' fault then.
I agree. The Democrats are in the mess they're in because they didn't forthrightly demand an agenda that was aggressively took on the economic forces in this country that have made mincemeat of the economy and the middle class and working class wage standards. And now you have a crop of Republicans that don't even want these Jimmy John workers to make $8.25 an hour. They want to get rid of the minimum wage, right?
Now, here's a question for you. How much money does Jimmy John's have to pay them?
Well, I don't know. One can do this. Like, you know what? You really strike me as somebody that really either is or would like to be a boss or just echoes the boss's agenda. They always say, we can't afford to pay this. Here's what happens. People shouldn't have to work their ass off for all their lives for such a pittance. We've got one of the lowest minimum wages in the industrialized world. Why, if we're the wealthiest nation in the world, why can't we pay everybody a living wage? Why are there people that have impacted wealth in the billions that they can afford to spend on Republican candidates so they can make more billions, whereas the average person that's working their ass off has to work for $8.25 an hour?
Okay, let's take the Jimmy John's thing for a second here, though. I'll just agree with you for the sake of argument that they could pay more. Then I'm going to ask you, have you looked at their income statement to see how much more money they actually made that they can pay their employees?
No, because one of the things is, one of the UAW...
Well, you know, we spent all weekend researching Jimmy John's.
Here, the UAW, during the 1950s, during some of these strikes, when they actually made these incredible gains, not only for their members, but when you have this kind of... they led the upward pressure on wages. And GM would say, well, we can't pay what you're asking. And they'd say, open the books. Open the books. Let's see what you can afford to pay. Let's see what the return on investment is. And, of course, they would say this is proprietary information. Well, who knows? As I said, and if you're up in an hour or so, you can listen to somebody who says that on these German corporate boards, these are corporations, these are capitalist enterprises, they have stockholders, they have to have return on investment, and they have representatives of the unions of the corporation sitting on the board. So the union members know, for instance, how much that they can afford to pay. And there's a social agreement of what is a fair wage. Here, it's just, again, it's like the 19th century. You can make billions and billions, and you can pay your workers $8 an hour. And if your union, if your wage workers unionize, you close the shop. Come on, man. We're going back to the 19th century. And you're going to go down just as quick. 313-298-WRIF. Here is Hank. Hank's in Ypsilanti. Hank, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I've been listening to you for a long time. I remember you had that show, Highway 101, you know?
Sure.
And then I lived out there in San Jose, Santa Cruz and stuff, so I really like to hear that stuff.
But Peter, he was listening to us when we were out in Santa Cruz.
That's right.
We love Santa Cruz.
Yeah, we love Santa Cruz, yeah.
Yeah, you can't take your dogs out on the street, something like that. No smoking kind of thing.
Whatever.
But, hey, you know, these guys on AM radio, you know, you only have to listen to them once or twice. See, I was in a car wreck and I got real serious brain damage. I lost my memory and all that. Mm. But I'm starting to think it's true when psychiatrists tell me I'm smarter than 96% of those guys. You know, Rush, Bill, Sean, and all those guys from Ohio and Chattanooga and stuff.
Sure.
They're not very smart, are they? Or?
No. No, they're smart about.
Oh God!
Smart about how they present their information and suck people in.
They're brilliant.
Yeah.
They're brilliant performers,
yeah.
And they have this capacity to, you know, I mean, think about this. They are these multimillionaires who have the capacity to fool millions of people into thinking that they have their interests in mind rather than the people in their class of the ultra wealthy. That's a good trick.
Well, even I can think that they're doing that. You know what I mean?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's all I had to say.
All right. Well, Hank, I'm glad you're back on the mend and all that. And,
yeah.
Yeah. We got fired from Santa Cruz.
Yeah, that MZ, remember the owner?
Yeah.
That right winger, he was a nutbag.
He was.
He for sure is a bagger these days.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure. And his mother, a year, so they...
I think they kind of liked us, really.
They blew off Jalene and me from the Santa Cruz station. And a year after, the mother of the owner got on the air and apologized to the people of Santa Cruz for having us on the air with such extreme positions and all that.
Oh, that's great.
I loved it.
Oh, that's awesome.
I loved it.
We did our job, Peter.
We did indeed. Here is Nick in Rochester Hills. Nick, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I was wondering if you guys ever heard of the new news organization. They've only been around for maybe a year or two, called The Real News.
I think I have, but enlighten us.
You should really check it out. Maybe Jolene, she can Google it. They got a channel on YouTube. It's a news organization dedicated to covering issues affecting working people, the unemployed, and the poor, and they have some really good debates on there as well. And I think it's a guy from Canada. He's originally from Canada, but he's a dual citizen from Canada and the United States named Paul Jay. He's the director or president of it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And he does a lot of stuff locally in Detroit as well. They cover issues all around, international issues as well as national issues. You should check it out sometime. It's really good.
Okay,
we'll do it.
We actually had a debate on there today between a free market guy named Peter Schiff. I don't know if you ever heard of him, and he debates a guy named Doug Henwood of Left Business
Business Observer.
Observer,
yeah, we know
sure.
Doug.
We interviewed Doug a lot.
Yeah, and they had a debate about the causes and solutions of the economic collapse. And this,
wait, Nick, there is actually somebody around that says we ought to do more deregulation? What planet is this guy from?
Well, yeah, that's this guy, Peter Schiff. He's an off remark. He actually stated that the goal of the economy is to eliminate all jobs. And I was arguing with a guy in, I watched the debate in the YouTube posting of it, and in the comment section, I was arguing with a few people who were, you know, hardcore capitalists, all that stuff. And he's basically saying, I'm like, okay, so if the point of the economy is to eliminate all jobs, then who's going to benefit once humans are all replaced in the workforce and the capitalists own all the means of production? What happens to the working people? Do they get nothing out of that? And then the capitalists basically reap all the rewards of the working people? And he said, yes. He said,
yeah, well, there you go. That's it. And it's like I said, it's the Guatemala model, and that's where we're heading. So a third of the people will be well-waged. The rest of the two-thirds will... Yeah.
Good luck.
Good luck. Yeah. All right, Nick, thanks for that information about the real news.
The new news.
Here's some political news. Levi Johnston.
Oh, old Levi.
Remind people who Levi is.
Levi was Bristol Palin's baby daddy.
Baby daddy, right. And she was going to marry him. They got engaged. They were on the front page of Us. They called us. We want to be on the front page. And
well, they got re-engaged.
Yeah. And this is Sarah Palin's daughter, Bristol.
Right.
And then she found out that he's...
Got another baby.
Got another baby, was it? Or just another babe?
No, another baby by the girlfriend he was with when they broke up.
Well, he was mad, too, because they made him cut off his mullet before the 2008 Republican...
He liked that mullet.
Yeah, but he is going to run for mayor of Wasilla.
Is this not great?
Yeah, where Sarah Palin got her start. And he says he's going to run for mayor of his Alaska hometown, but he hasn't decided whether he's a Democrat or a Republican.
I just love this story.
He's the father of Sarah Palin's grandson.
I love this story so much I posted it in the studio. Did you see that?
Oh, no, really?
Yeah.
Well, he said this on Real Time with Bill Maher, and he's been talking to residents about his candidacy. He's working on building a platform. Isn't he pretty young, isn't he? Just about 21 or something?
Yeah. He's like, I don't even know if he is 21.
Well, Bristol Palin, has she been kicked off?
She's still sexing it up on Dancing with the Stars. Yes.
And where is this so absurd. Oh, yeah, wait. Johnston plans to run for office in Wasilla as part of a reality TV show.
Yeah, this is fabulous. I mean, I could barely even get... It's four paragraphs. I could barely get through it without just, you know, fetal position laughing. And the best part was he said on Real Time with Bill Maher, what is he doing on any show?
He says the appearance on Maher's HBO show would be his last interview for a while.
Good.
Hey, by the way, remember I was just saying that how all the teabaggers are just essentially chumps for the ultra wealthy. All of these right-wing conservatives that were denouncing the stimulus that have created enormous numbers of jobs throughout the country. For instance, there's a Republican from Dallas, Texas, Pete Sessions. He relentlessly sailed the Democratic passed stimulus law as a wasteful trillion-dollar spending spree. Guess what? He's bellying up to the table, and he's requested $81 million in stimulus money.
Oh, how surprising.
Scores of Republicans and conservative Democrats who voted against the $787 billion American Recovery and Reinvestment Act subsequently wrote letters requesting funds for projects in a massive behind-the-scenes letter-writing and phone call campaign. Those asking for money include Tea Party favorites like freshman Massachusetts Senator Scott Brown, really crazy Representative of Michelle Bachmann, who says things like that are bringing socialism to the United States. But hey, if they're giving out millions, she wants to get it for her district.
Give some to Mama.
Guess who else? Ron Paul.
Oh, geez.
John McCain.
Uh-huh.
Mike Pence of Indiana. What frauds these people are. What frauds these people are. I mean, how can anybody take them seriously?
Good question.
Ron Paul Rick in East Point writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com about the origin of the Tea Party. It was started by Ron Paul, he says, and he... come on, he didn't do everything, Rick, but because didn't that guy... There was some TV commentator that called for that. But anyway, it was called the Tea Party because it was short for taxed enough already. It got popular and was hijacked by mainstream Republic pukes, as he calls them, like Newt Gingrich, Sarah Palin, Dickhead Army, Oh, did I just read that? Basically, the neocon, I don't want to read that part of it, Bible-thumping repukes. The Ron Paul people have left the movement. The Tea Party talks all about small government, except when it comes to the military-industrial fearmongers. They fully support America killing brown people so they can steal the natural resources in their countries. Paleoconservatives do not support the Tea Party. We believe in liberty for all human beings, no matter what color their skin, who they pray to, or what orifice they derive sexual pleasure from.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
Which reminds me of the movie that my wife and I just saw last night, Howl. H-O-W-L. That was a poem written in 1955 by Allen Ginsberg.
Mm-hmm.
And subsequently, people selling his poem in San Francisco were arrested on obscenity charges. And so this film is all about that and about the trial.
Cool.
And they read.
The documentary film.
Well, it almost seems like it, but it's not. In fact, a lot of it, while the poem is being read by Allen Ginsberg, the Allen Ginsberg character, there is this incredible animation done by a guy I know, Eric Drucker.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Google him or Google Howl and check it out. I don't know whether it's coming to Detroit or not. We actually paid like $6 for it on Comcast. On demand?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. 313-298-WRIF. Let's see. Here is Rudy and Warren. Rudy, hi. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. Hey, Jolene. How are you?
Hey. How you doing?
Well, hey.
Good. I've listened to you guys on and off over a lot of years, and glad to hear that you guys are still on. So kudos to you guys for being able to survive the right-wing terror that seems to be out there.
We're glad to still be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that you guys are there. I'm not sure, but it seems like after listening to the people talk about the unions and, you know, you get all these folks that, lower middle class and middle class and blue collar folks that seem to want to vote against their best interests. And I think it's just because we need a different argument. You know, most people, it seems like that they know union members that brag about working a half a day and taking sick days off and this, that, and everything else. And this is where the union gets a bad name, you know, because every middle class person knows the union guy down the street that takes, you know, all the time off and brags about how they can't fire him. And
I mean, so that's the myth.
This gets everybody turned against the union.
Yeah.
And so consequently, you know, rather than looking at the people that we should be looking at, you know, we're looking at each other and, you know, we're looking at our neighbor going, oh, he's got more than I do. He shouldn't have that. Rather than going, wait a minute, he's got more than I do. That's pretty cool. I'm going to see if I can get that too, you know. And it's like what we're doing with the teachers. People are saying, oh, teachers are overpaid and they get the summers off and blah, blah, blah. When I was a kid, teachers were revered, and we all knew the teachers didn't make a whole lot of money, but the reason that they did it was a noble profession. They did it because they got the summers off, and yeah, they got some good benefits. But since now all the rest of us don't get good benefits, and now since all the rest of us make less, all of a sudden it makes the teachers look like they make a whole lot of money when they really don't.
Yeah, they really don't. And the reason that the unions are being attacked is the Republicans realize that the crucial role that they play in the Democratic Party. So, I mean, all that fiscal stuff, they couldn't care a bit about what they want to do. Well, I mean, it's twofold. One, they want to drive down wages. But the other thing is they want to destroy the teachers' unions, which is a bulwark of the Democratic Party and essentially our liberal institution. So, what effect does that have on the quality of life for the people that work their butts off for our kids? They couldn't care less, because what they want is political power, and they want no restraints on the greed they have to drive all of our wages down. All right, Rudy, thank you so much. Thank you for calling 313-298-WRIF. And here is Ron in Detroit. Hi, Ron, you're on the air.
Yeah, good evening, or good morning, Peter.
Hi.
You know, the state of our country is just, oh, my God, you know, I'm so confused. I've been living here in Detroit for about 20 years now, and I look around me, and it blows my mind to see corporate America and George Orwell's 1984 being fulfilled.
There you go.
I mean, the Ministry of Truth, it turns everything into a lie. The people are sheeple, and, you know, it's supposed to be we the people, and it's not we the people, and it never will. because can't nobody get in line. The division, you know, Marx said that our freedoms and our liberties, America would fall, and we don't have to go to Revelation and see we're the great harlot, and we've done fell off the throne. We've been stripped bare. Oh. Greed's running the world. When you America, you know, America and greed run the world, you know, it's getting to where, you know, I don't want to talk the politics and religion thing, but it's just, you know, can anybody figure out that, you know, it's all people's greed. Everybody's out for themselves. Can't nobody just, you know, this country was founded on what? The Minuteman. We left England. Taxes. We wanted freedom of religion. We come over here. What are we getting taxed to death?
Well, we certainly aren't getting taxed to death. I mean, we have one of the lowest tax rates of any of the industrialized country. And the problem is that not so much that we have a high tax. A lot of countries have much, much higher taxes. But what we get are foreign wars. What other countries get are, again, free universities, they with, you know, running up tens of thousands of dollars of debt. They get a national health program. They get, you know, cities that are not, you know, filled with crime and the deteriorating infrastructure, all that. All right, I got to get one more call in before our break. And, hi, this is it Shagan? Shagan?
Sorry, it's Shagan.
Shagan, sorry.
Hi,
you're
Carol
on the air.
Shagan?
Yeah. Oh, Carol, okay. I got
okay,
it.
Yeah.
Hi, Shagan. You're on the air.
Hi. First of all, love you guys' show, and thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Earlier, you were talking about Jimmy John's, and I know you were using it as a metaphor, but I'm actually a delivery driver for Jimmy John's.
Oh.
Are you fast?
Yes. I drive like a bat out of hell, that's for sure.
But you got to talk faster, too, like those ads.
Sorry. But I make $5.25 an hour.
Wait, wait, wait. How can you make $5.25 an hour? What, does the minimum wage is 7.25?
Because of tips.
So you're like a wait staff?
Yeah. So we depend on our tips. We are not compensated for our gas.
Oh, come on.
Nope, not at all. And even if. If I like today, I worked for 6.5 hours. I made 4 deliveries. I got tipped 50 cents on one, a couple on the other. I barely made minimum wage with it. Mm-hmm. In the event that I don't make minimum wage, even with my tips, I'm still not compensated.
Oh, you know,
I don't get paid for overtime. Even hours that I work overtime, I don't even get paid for at all.
You know, Shagan, that this sounds like, maybe I'm wrong, but this sounds like a violation of the Michigan statute that covers wage and hours.
Oh, it is. It is on so many levels. But there's nothing that, I mean, I can hardly even prove stuff that I've worked. They don't give me ways to track my hours. They don't give me ways to track my wages. Everything they put in a computer, and I can't see it. I don't get printouts of anything. Last week, I just got my check, which was short over 10 hours,
mm-hmm.
and now I'm going to have to fight God knows how much to see if I can even get those hours.
Well, wait a minute. If you fight, aren't they going to fire you?
Who knows? They might. I mean, it's possible, but they're so short-staffed right now. I mean, last night they called in a kid that was puking all day to drive.
Well, that's interesting.
Well, that's also against state health laws right there.
That was actually one of the complaints in Minneapolis where there was a unionization drive at Jimmy John's there that just lost by 2 votes. And they said that people were routinely called in to when they were very sick. And, thank you for doing that when, I'm trying to find that story again. I can't find it. But, that's terrible. Well, I don't know what to say, Shagan, although I hate to say this, but in many ways, people like you working at the wage they are the leading edge of the race to the bottom. And for those people that go, it's not going to affect me, it is, because the bottom and the top, the top layer of worker wages and the bottom are have a direct relationship to one another. And if we had a heavily unionized society like we had in the 1950s, for instance, which really built the middle class, and you could work at Ford or something like that and still you know, make a decent wage. Now we're going backwards. So, you know, wages are being cut in half, and even on union contracts. This presses it all downward. And it's all about a redistribution of income. All this income that, you know, of what you provide in terms of the wealth you create for the company you work for, rather than being shared in any equitable way, just that's more that the owner or the, you know, the stockholder makes in other industries.
It just makes me so mad.
It does as well. Ugh. Well, Shagan, we actually got to take
fight the good fight, girl.
We have to take a break, give them hell, and think about that. If you didn't quite get what I meant about the wage and hour board, email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com or just go to my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. You can reach me from there. All right, we got to take a break. Thank you, and best of luck.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werbe and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jalene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Time's running out. You're maxed out on your credit cards. The collection calls are coming every day, and now you're two payments behind on your mortgage. Every time you turn on the radio, there's some cheerful couple telling you how they got out of debt overnight. Their stress is gone, and everything's just wonderful. Come on. The truth is, what sounds too good to be true is too good to be true. You need real help, and you need it now. Not bankruptcy. That should be your last choice. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're the attorney-driven program, dedicated to helping you get out of debt in months instead of years, saving you thousands, and without risking your family home. We know what we're doing, and we don't make promises we can't keep. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Get out of debt. Call Credit Card Relief at 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronics Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronics Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronics Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101 WRIF.
The Ref.
Betsy, look at these sweaters. They'd look amazing on our girls.
Maybe.
Come on, what's wrong?
Suzanne, I have no business being in the store. I should not be shopping. Things are really tight. We're behind on our mortgage.
Listen, Bill and I had the same problem, and we got some really great counseling, and it was free. I'm going to email you the information.
If you even think you may be in danger of foreclosure, call the National Foundation for Credit Counseling today at 866-687-6322 or visit MortgageHelpNow.org. Public service from the NFCC.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
What would you do if you had to choose between the buffalo
and the giraffes. Between a flower or an elephant, what would you choose? What if you had to decide between a 100-year-old tree and a 1,000,000-year-old beech? Between drinking clean water or breathing clean air? Would you make the right choice? Would there be a right choice? Now there's a way to help. Not just one, but all these things. EarthShare, the world's leading environmental groups working together. It's one choice we can all live with.
This ad sponsored by Ad Council and EarthShare.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. It's our final segment, so grab the phone. Some open lines for the first time tonight. Stephanie, who is answering the phone, and she said, wow, it's busy tonight. At 1 a.m., Julie Holland, M.D., I'm going to interview her about the Pot Book, A Complete Guide to Cannabis, Its Role in Medicine, Politics, Science, and Culture. And then, how about a little socialism, or a lot? Tom Gagan, an attorney and author, writes, Were You Born on the Wrong Continent? How the European Model Can Help You Get a Life. Oh, also on my website where I'm reading this from, Peter Werby, WERBE.com, there's lots of terrific links. And including the WikiLeaks about the Iraq War, 400,000 pages have been released. Also, how Justice Clarence Thomas turns out to be just what we thought he was.
More of a perv than we thought.
A porn freak, which is okay, but don't lie about it when you're in front of Congress, so he should be impeached for perjury. And the part that I like the best, it says, at best, the teabaggers are stooges for the rich. At worst, they are tied to the worst races and neo-Nazis. And then here's more on the Koch brothers, who's bidding the pathetic teabaggers carry out most without realizing it.
And that's K-O-C-H. And, you know, on the porn note, I have a friend who lives out in L.A., and he was up for a job with Larry Flint Productions, and he was all bummed out because he was going to have to do some quality control on these porn videos, and he thought it was going to ruin his porn habit. Sad. I'm going to tell him to call Clarence.
There you go.
They can commiserate.
Well, one of the things that in 1991, I don't know if all of you have been following this, but the Clarence Thomas, the Justice of the Supreme Court, when he was nominated in 1991, cynically by George H.W. Bush, the elder, he was accused by Anita Hill of making all sorts of inappropriate
sexual harassment.
Mm-hmm. Including saying things like telling her about this porn video called Long Dong Silver.
Yeah.
And and making jokes about pubic hairs on Coke cans. Ugh. Let me ask you this. If you were, does that sound like anything that a woman would fabricate? I mean, if a woman was going to fabricate something, it just doesn't sound like the type of
The Coke can?
Yeah, that's so male.
It's extremely male.
So then what happened is his crazy teabagger wife, Virginia, who gets like the secret funding from like $500,000 at a crack for her right-wing organization, she calls this Anita Hill almost 20 years after this went down.
And this is what, last weekend?
Yeah, so why don't you apologize, you know, and pray on it. And
have a good day.
Brings up the whole thing once again. The other thing is,
like, how dumb is she to bring that back up about her own husband?
I bet you there's trouble at the Thomas home.
In River City, as they say.
And we also spoke right at the beginning of the hour with Greg from peacenick.org, but not like the Peacenick, but with a K on the end.
So N-I-C-K.
N-I-C-K. Peacenick.org. And they are having, the group, Peacenick, is having a sort of a rally.
Yes.
At, I don't have it in front of me, at the Phoenix Cafe in Hazel Park on John R. at 10 Mile Road on next Saturday. And
yes,
it's going to coincide with the John Stewart Bring a rally to restore sanity.
Yeah, and what he was saying, from noon to three, when the rally is being televised, they're going to
stream it,
and then there'll be conversation and music and
music into the night, including Greg's band, The Insurgent. And but I wonder, John Stewart said it's not going to be a political rally.
He's a jokester.
Well, he is.
You know.
I wonder what they're going to say. Okay, so let's go get some more calls. Hi, this is Peter and Jolene. You're on the air. This is Larry from Riverview. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing tonight?
Good, good, good.
I just want to talk about how the unions actually treat people. Yeah, granted, you got a point. They pay good wages, but they don't always offer benefits.
Well, when they don't, it means they're a weak union. In fact, listen, I belong to a union that's decent, that's not corrupt, that doesn't pay its union executives high wages, but you know, we're kind of weak these days, so the benefits have been reduced quite a bit.
I used to belong to 1191 Labor Union. I used to subcontract at the steel plants.
Yeah.
Doug Island, U.S. Steel, Severstal, water treatment plants, nuclear power plants. We also do road construction. And I've noticed if you were friends with the boss and the boss's sons, or you grew up by them, or you went to the same school with them, you worked. You worked a lot, but if you did not know anybody, you were struggling for work, and the union stewards would not do nothing, and I've actually seen them on Doug Island.
Well, I'll tell you, the laborers had some real problems with corruption, and one of the things that happens to institutions, they very frequently become corrupt and self-serving for the people at the center of them. That's happened at different periods in American history to unions, and every once in a while they need some radical shaking up. And a lot of these unions, I don't think I'd make any friends if I started naming them, although probably the same ones occur to you, need that. I mean, we don't need union leaders that are parking their Lincoln Town cars on the sidewalks at their international headquarters, for instance. In fact, we don't need union leaders that have enough money to afford Lincolns. And, I mean, one of the unions that I like that's not real big, I've got a number of people I know and a couple of friends in the IBEW, the Electrical Workers Union, and oh, they're happy enough mostly with it, but there's a smaller electrical workers union called the UE, the United Electrical Workers, and they, one of their bylaws says is that the union president cannot make more than the highest paid worker in the industry.
Ooh.
So imagine that, as opposed to some of these unions that have almost become a racket. UAW pays fairly low wages or, you know, benefits to its upper leadership. And what we need is somebody like Bob King who says, hey, look, we got to get back into making this a social movement. When we talk about elevating union wages, we've got to elevate everybody's wages. And I think it's, you know, we'll see what he can do. But, I always talk about things aren't better than a stick in the eye. There's been times when unions have been, in fact, a stick in the eye, and they shouldn't. They're violating their mission, to be sure. All right, Larry, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let's get some more calls. Here is Mike in Lincoln Park. Hi, Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, Peter and Julian.
Hi.
Hello.
I want to say, first of all, I've called a couple times over the years, and I've never said thank you for the show, because it's my only little bit of sanity every week.
Well, thank
That's
you.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
But you're welcome. And what I've been wanting to talk about is, am I the only one that's seen this movie documentary off of HBO, aired it, I guess, because that's where I've seen it, called Gasland?
No, a number of people have been recommending it to me, and I should watch it, and I should put it on my website from everything I've heard. Tell us about it, though.
Well, that's all I know. I've seen it 2 or 3 months ago. I don't want to sound like I know what I'm talking about, but it's starting to hit home out by my mom lives out around Tecumseh area.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a friend that I work with that lives about 4 miles from her, and he says he can light his water.
Which they show in the documentary, apparently.
Yes, sir. And something about this hydraulic fracturing, they go in and they pay people like 1%, I'm sure, of what they're earning off it to put a wellhead on their land. But what they're doing is, with this hydraulic fracturing, they break up the rock, which ruins their water.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to bring this up to everybody in my circle on that, even people that live out that way, they don't seem to be interested in it. And I don't hear any talk about it on the news. I don't hear any talk about it anywhere.
You know, they'll be interested in it eventually. Sometimes it takes a while for people to get it.
Or something awful to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
But as you've noticed, Mike, I mean, you nicely said thank you. But you know what? I may have mentioned that because there's been some movement up in about two-thirds up in the state where people have been complaining about all of this. But you're right. It really hasn't raised the needle too much.
I mean, where could I go to maybe get more involved in it or something to start making it more aware or something? I'd like to, you know, do what I can.
There's got to be an environmental organization. Do you use a computer?
Oh, yeah. I'm not real fluent on it.
Well, you don't have to be.
Maybe Natural Resources Defense Council?
Yeah, there is a Natural Resource Defense Council.
NRDC.org, I think.
Yeah, and you know what? Or I'll tell you what. I'll make it easy on you because I'm interested in this as well. I'll do the research for you. If you email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com or go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com.
It's on my favorites.
Okay, well, if you go down on the right-hand column at the bottom, it says how to contact Peter. So I want to find out more about it because, you know, I'm one of those people that you're talking about.
I was hoping that it would come up in this, like, election season that I'd hear something about it, but I haven't heard not one thing except watching the documentary myself.
That's because the baggers have taken over.
So email me and I'll get on it, I promise, okay?
All right,
Mike, thank you very much.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for bringing that up. What religion is Homer Simpson?
Well, you know what? Apparently, the Vatican says Catholic.
He's a Catholic. Can you believe this? The Simpsons just got a blessing from the Vatican. That beer-swilling, donut-loving Homer Simpson and his son Bart are Catholics. They talk. What does that mean? The Adventures of the Little Guys in Yellow? What does that mean?
It must be their clothes. I think it's a cute little show. It's funny.
Osservatore Romano, the newspaper, said few people know it, but he does everything to hide it. But it's true. Homer J. Simpson is Catholic.
I don't get this story.
They did a study, and it concluded The Simpsons is among the few TV programs for kids in which Christian faith, religion, and questions about God are recurrent themes. I mean, they pray before every meal, right? But don't you think it's kind of a send-up of them?
I mean, yes, I do.
It's a totally dysfunctional family, and they're praying?
I think they got suckered in over there.
Yeah. Now, Al Jean, who is the executive producer of The Simpsons, said he was in shock and awe at the latest assertion, adding that The Simpsons attend the Presbyterian First Church of Springfield. We've pretty clearly shown that Homer is not Catholic. I really don't think he could go without meat on Friday for even an hour.
Hey, there's a little bit of, you know, a hypocritical thing going on. Maybe he is.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Here's Brad in West Bloomfield. Brad, hi, you're on the air.
How you doing tonight, Peter?
We're good.
You know, getting to that Homer Simpson religion thing, I don't know. I think we all should follow Peter Griffin on The Family Guy with that religion is a font. Actually, I was calling about the whole medical marijuana situation going on again. There was another bust this evening.
Where?
There was.
Where was it?
I believe it was in Ferndale. Somebody who had licensing to grow. And I guess the city closed down the operations.
Oh, this was not a clinic, but this was an individual.
Caregiver.
Caregiver.
Yeah. Had 75 plants because he was really had a lot of nausea.
Well, yeah, right.
You can. How many can you have? 12?
Six.
It's six per person that you are a caregiver for.
Okay.
And then you can be a caregiver for five people. six if you are a caregiver to yourself as well.
Wow. So you can have 30.
Which
you can be. Yeah.
36 plants. Get a lot of butt off of that. You know,
that's a lot of filet fishes too afterwards.
Oh no. Turn that down. What is with the fish? At least he didn't call you the D word. Yeah.
Well, you know, I've gotten a few people angry because I keep going like a wink, wink, nod, nod about this medical marijuana, that it's really just a bunch of dopers using this as
Peter, are you out of everyone should not be.
I know that it has great medical
benefits,
and a lot of people need it. And in fact, our guest in about 5 or 10 minutes, Julie, where's her name?
She'll be talking all about it.
She's going to be talking some about it. Yeah.
And did you learn anything? Because you pretty much have covered the gamut through the years.
Yeah,
all of this.
I realize that you're supposed to hold your breath, hold it in. I didn't.
You are? Isn't that bad for you? You're a liar. That's not good for your lungs.
You know what we didn't bring up? We don't have any time. But we didn't bring up this whole thing with this commentator for National Public Radio, NPR, firing Juan Williams for making these stupid anti-Muslim remarks on Fox News.
Yeah.
Actually, and do I have this on my site? Oh, I can look, can I? I don't think I put it on yet. Michael Moore has...
you do have it on there. I swear I saw it on there, Peter.
I might have just sent it to you. I don't... God, there's so much on here. I can't believe it. He was on Fox News and made these...
Juan, not Michael.
Juan was, yeah. Mm-hmm. One more time. And he said that, he gave this sort of insulting thing about Muslims. And so NPR fired him.
Well, NPR is not down with that whole anti-Muslim sentiment.
Well, I'll tell you, the whole idea of anybody getting fired for expressing themselves in the media...
It's a little scary,
I don't like that. Yeah. But
we're not bigots. We're not racists. You know, that's the difference between us
either.
And a lot of
he's
these other folks.
He's an African-American. He's written some pretty decent... histories of the civil rights movement.
Right. Not even speaking about him, though, Peter. I wasn't speaking about him. I'm just saying in general.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pretty nasty folks out there.
But you know what? It's just Fox News.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's FAUX.
That provides a platform for the worst in this society. All right. Hey, thank you so much for listening and for calling. Jalene Jordan, I can say it. Yeah.
It's good to be back.
Yeah.
Next week.
Stephanie, what?
This voice is going to be 100%.
All right. And we would like Facebook friends. Go to Facebook.com.
And if you're interested in being a guest blogger on Facebook, this is my big idea that no one's responded. So come on. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com.
And I hate to say it, but no conservatives need apply.
No baggers.
No baggers.
Bye-bye.
And if you think, see, you're intolerant. I'll tell you what.
It's our page.
I'll tell you
what we want. It's our domain.
But I'll make him a deal. You get me a guest shot on one of these bagger sites, and we'll let them on ours.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
That's the sound of people throwing out their old dehumidifiers. They've replaced them with the energy-saving Wave Ventilation Unit. Wave Ventilation expels moisture, gases, and toxins trapped in your basement or crawl space and replaces it with drier, fresher air. The computerized Wave Ventilation requires no maintenance. There are no buckets to empty, no filters to change. And compared to a dehumidifier, it will save you hundreds of dollars a year in energy costs. One customer wrote,
I was stunned by the difference. I had had a dehumidifier for almost 20 years without ever getting rid of that musty smell. And now that smell is finally gone.
Wave can transform your home into a drier, healthier environment. Satisfaction guaranteed. Find out more about Wave Ventilation right now.
For free information, go to goodairnow.com. That's goodairnow.com. Or call 1-866-324-9481. That's 1-866-324-9481.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Is this on? Thank you. All right. Good morning, students. This is your principal speaking. Please listen closely to the following schedule changes. First period will be replaced by sleeping in. Second period will be replaced by warm weather. Third period will be replaced by belly flops. Fourth period will be replaced by goofing around. Fifth period will be replaced by batting leadoff. But there will be no changes to lunch. It will be in session every day.
School may be out for summer.
but lunch is always in session. If your kids rely on subsidized school meals, call Gleaners Community Food Bank of Southeastern Michigan at 1-866-GLEANER or visit feedingamerica.org/summermeals.
A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
101.1 WRIF.
Hi, this is Mark Schmeier from Creed.
Hey, everybody, this is Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters.
Hey, it's Casey.
This is Chad. This is Chris.
This is Brian from Cabo.
And you've got it on Detroit's rock station, 101 WRIF. The Riff.
Everything that rocks.
Energy Hog the team! I want you to infiltrate the house and waste some energy!
We'll just sneak into these leaky windows!
Just like you thought, boss! No insulation in the attic!
Perfect! Now go wild and waste some wattage!
The Mitchell House. A house like many others. Except this one's under attack by energy hogs. They show up anywhere energy's being wasted.
Talk to me, hogs!
Washer, it's not Energy Star rated.
Outstanding! What about the thermostat?
Not programmable. I repeat, not programmable.
Looks like we're living high on the hog.
Only one person has the power to get rid of energy hogs. You.
Hold on! Someone's home!
Andy's got energy-efficient light bulbs!
To find out how you can fight energy hogs, log on to energyhog.org. You'll find fun games and lots of tips on making your home more energy efficient.
Now he's installing Energy Star appliances.
Not Energy Star! That's it! Get out of there! I'll get you, energyhog.org!
Hey! Wait for me!
Brought to you by the Alliance to Save Energy, the Department of Energy, and the Ad Council.
Man Up with 101 WRIF and the Riff's Ultimate Man Card Adventures. Adventure number one. Roll up your sleeves and be a part of the Cintas Ice Cream during a Red Wings home game at Joe Louis Arena. Keep it locked on 101 The Riff with your chance to win your very own man card, along with tickets to see the Wings clash with the Coyotes November 8th. One lucky Riff winner will score the grand prize, an instant ticket upgrade into awesome seats for the game. Plus, you and Meltdown will be on the ice to help clear it between periods. The Ultimate Man Card Adventures, brought to you by your Detroit Red Wings.
Get the family back to see the Wings take on Phoenix November 8th at the Joe. For only $48, you get two tickets, two hot dogs, and two Coke Zeros. For tickets, visit DetroitRedWings.com.
Listen and win from 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks. 101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. You know, I've done a lot of interviews over the years on the legal aspects of marijuana, some of its, different properties, how it affects us, the social implications, how the laws, the prohibition against marijuana creates this huge pool of clients for the prison industrial complex. And I'm always hoping that when finally that I get to one point where it'll be the final interview. And it looks like after all these years of wasting billions and billions from our public treasury trying to stop people from changing their consciousness by smoking flowers, that will maybe come to an end of all of this. And a book has come my way, and it has that definitive quality to it. If you had any questions, I think you could easily go to this particular book. It's real simple. It's called The Pot Book, and you can go to thepotbook.com. Its subtitle is A Complete Guide to Cannabis, Its Role in Medicine, Politics, Science, and Culture. And it's a series of essays. It's edited by Dr. Julie Holland, who is a psychiatrist. She specializes in psychopharmacology and a clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at NYU School of Medicine. She's an expert on street drugs and intoxication states, and she was the attending psychiatrist in the psych ER at Bellevue Hospital. That must have been an experience. We'll talk a little about that. From 1996 to 2005, she's written about another drug. It was called Ecstasy. She was the editor of that book, Ecstasy, The Complete Guide, and the author of Weekends in Bellevue. She lives in the Hudson Valley. It's a pleasure to welcome Julie Holland to the Peter Werby Show. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Am I being too optimistic? Are we at the end of this ridiculous prohibition of the evil weed, finally?
Well, I too am an optimist, and there's no question there really has been a sea change. I mean, what's exciting at least is that people are talking about it and people are bothering to get educated about it. So I am hopeful you know, you've got 14 states now in Washington, D.C. that are medical marijuana states. I believe Michigan is as well.
Yeah, Michigan is, indeed.
So, I mean, that, you know, that's just by numbers, that's nearly a third of the country. And California is voting in 2 weeks on legalizing recreational use, and they've got nearly a third of the population of the country. So, you know, I do think that the tide is shifting and that things are changing. And I think one of the things that's sort of helping everything along is the recession, that, you know, we're spending a tremendous amount of money to lock people up for nonviolent offenses, and we're spending a lot of money on interdiction. And, you know, we could be creating revenue from hemp and from medical marijuana instead. So I think that hopefully, and anybody who sort of crunches the numbers, it's what's called a no-brainer. But so I think that there has to be more than just money here. I think there's a tremendous amount of fear involved in the way the drug policies are set up right now. And people are afraid, you know, drugs are subversive, I think, and it makes the government nervous that people could actually sort of think for themselves and think outside the box and question, you know, the status quo. And so I think that it's, unfortunately, it's not just the money.
Well, when it's illegal, it makes people that in fact use it transgressors or rebels. Once
right.
it's legal, they'll be good citizens once again.
You know, there are plenty of people who have jobs and are taxpayers and are raising children and are, you know, upstanding members of the community and go to PTA meetings and they're soccer coaches, whatever, and they're outlaws because they choose to smoke pot instead of drink wine.
Yeah, I always list, in fact, I might as well do it now, all the people that I personally know that are everything from prosecutors to policemen, firemen, businessmen, doctors, all of that smoke marijuana, and lawyers, and fortunately the ones that are in critical areas, like certainly like doctors, don't do that while they're high. You used the word, Julie Holland, recreational, to describe what may become legal in California after November 2nd, and that's what's important. But in your book, The Pot Book, A Complete Guide to Cannabis, at the beginning, you give a salute to the late John Paul Morgan, Dr. John Paul Morgan, and you talk about how in 1997 he helped debunk the following myths, and then list, I can't really add it up, looks like 15 to 18, and I guess my position on it, and each one of these is a myth, but if every one of them was so, should we still be making it illegal? This sounds like you as a physician, as a psychiatrist, this is mental health and physical health concerns, not the law enforcement.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's something that I say pretty frequently, is this is a public health issue, and this is much more a medical issue and sort of a personal cognitive liberty issue. It does not need to be decided in the courts and in the prisons. I mean, our prisons are really, really overcrowded. Especially in California, you know, they had no room for Lindsay Lohan to stay beyond, you know, a few moments, basically. Our prisons are really crowded with nonviolent offenders where there is no complainant. You know, there's no one who has been wronged. It is a public health issue.
Right.
And, you know, those myths that John Morgan busted way back when, you know, there's scientific fact backing up all of those. I mean, there's when you dispassionately, objectively look at the data, there's no question this should not be a Schedule I drug. I mean, it does have medical implications and medical uses, and it doesn't have as high a potential for abuse as alcohol and cigarettes do. And those are two drugs that aren't even scheduled at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we know the damage. Most of us. It's pretty funny. I don't think there's a single person listening that doesn't know either anyone in their family, their friends, or family of their friends that hasn't died of lung cancer. And I think there's very few of us that don't know someone who is an alcoholic or a recovering alcoholic. Some people say, though, why are we going to add another potential abuse substance to the mix? We got enough problems.
You know, I mean, there's a great book called If Cannabis Is Safer, why are they driving us to drink? I mean, one reason to add it is that it's actually a healthier choice. I know it sounds crazy, but...
No, there's a book. There's a book with that in the subtitle. I can't remember the guy I interviewed said a healthier choice.
Paul Armentano. I mean, it absolutely is a healthier choice. This is a really non-toxic drug. And, you know, cigarettes kill half, you know, once you become a regular user of cigarettes kill half their users. Nobody dies from cannabis intoxication. There's no toxic dose. There's no overdose. And there's also no medical risk of being in withdrawal, which is really pretty mild. I mean, the if you're an alcoholic and you abruptly stop drinking, there's a chance that you will die from the withdrawal. And it's fairly easy to die from an alcohol overdose and aspirin overdoses. But you know, this is a fairly non-toxic drug where you can't die from an overdose and you don't die from withdrawal. So in some ways, it really is a healthier, safer choice compared to some of the things that are currently not scheduled and that are available.
Yeah. Cigarettes killed my father. He hadn't smoked in 50 years, but it'll come back and grab you. Now, you're a psychiatrist specializing in psychopharmacology. Is that what drove your interest in writing the pot book, A Complete Guide to Cannabis?
I did, you know, I edited this book on ecstasy back in 2001, which was a nonprofit project where all the royalties funded MDMA research. And the reason why I did that is because this is a Schedule I drug, an illegal drug, but it actually has tremendous potential to be helpful to the field of psychiatry and as a medicine to be used in therapy. And this, the pot book really is sort of a companion piece, I feel like, to the ecstasy book. It's also a nonprofit venture where all the proceeds will fund therapeutic research with cannabis. And again, I edited the book. It's got multiple contributors. The pop book has over 50 contributors, but I put it together. But it's the same situation where you have a drug which is illegal in Schedule I, but it has the potential to be used as a medicine. So that was basically my idea, is just to try to educate people. I think there's a lot of misinformation when it comes to drugs. I mean, our government is not that, it seems, open or happy or willing to let you have all the data and make the choice for yourself. So our government makes choices for you and says, you know, this isn't safe. This is, and, but, you know, what I wanted to do is at least put together the data to show that it doesn't meet criteria for Schedule I. You know, it's got a medical use and it has a lower abuse potential than a lot of drugs which aren't even scheduled at all.
Well, you can get really libertarian on it, which I do, that even if it had a great potential for harm, why is it why does the government criminalize its use? I mean, it has a great responsibility, I would say, the government, to inform the potential for harm, that we should make sure that nobody is intoxicated on anything while they're doing critical services or driving or something like that.
Right.
But there is a really funky, you know, social history to all that. You go back to the 1930s. What was that crazy movie that they made?
Reefer Madness.
Reefer Madness. That was it.
I mean, I definitely learned a lot about the 30s when I was researching this book. And, you know, what it sort of came down to is that when alcohol went from being prohibited to legal, a lot of people were out of work. A lot of, you know, there was this huge sort of industrial complex of the feds who had been chasing down bootleggers, et cetera, who all of a sudden were out of work. And that's sort of when they decided to make cannabis, which was a medicine, into an illegal drug, and they started calling it marijuana. I mean, I don't, you know, you may notice that the word marijuana does not appear on the cover of this book, and that was very important to me. I mean, the publishers wanted to call it the Marijuana Papers, which was sort of a joke about papers, which, you know, I get it, it's clever, but I don't want the word marijuana on the cover because, and I try not to use the word marijuana. Marijuana was a word that, when they went to make cannabis illegal, they had to sort of give it a new twist because everybody knew about cannabis in the 30s. Cannabis was something that your doctor prescribed. It was something, you know, it was in the pharmacopoeia, and it was basically a prescription medicine. I mean, you could get it as a tincture or as a salve, and it was useful for a whole host of ills and complaints, you know, stomach aches and menstrual cramps and insomnia and anxiety and nausea, and if you had low appetite or if you had a low mood, they would prescribe cannabis. The doctors, the AMA, when they were consulted about making marijuana illegal, they said, excuse, no way. Why would we make it illegal? This is a very useful medicine to us. And on the floor of Congress, the AMA was misrepresented. And when they were asked, when the people who were deciding to make marijuana an illegal drug were asked whether the AMA was behind them or not, they said, yes, the AMA is approved. And that was a complete lie. The AMA had not in any way gone on board. And that's still the case now, where you've got medical societies and societies of nurses and physicians who are saying, this is a medicine. We want to be able to use this as a medicine. You know, we want it reinstated because it was a medicine and it was made illegal.
The book is The Pot Book, A Complete Guide to Cannabis, Its Role in Medicine, Politics, Science, and Culture. It's a series, 50 essays, in fact. It's edited by Julie Holland, M.D., my guest on the Peter Werby Show. Does it have, I mean, now that there's medical marijuana available in in Michigan, many people feel, and I have to say that it sort of strikes me that this is just, I mean, there's certainly people that use it for ills, but in a lot of ways, just, you know, the people that say that they have medical problems are using it recreationally. As a physician, are there actually specific things that you would prescribe it for rather than the big pharma drugs?
Well, I guess one thing I would like to say is that I feel like the whole recreational therapeutic dichotomy, it probably is sort of a falsehood. I mean, I think that there is a spectrum, and, you know, things that people do recreationally to make them feel better can potentially be therapeutic.
Sure.
So.
And what's wrong with recreation?
Exactly.
Exactly.
So, and I think that, let's see, I don't know where to start. Well, I guess the most important thing that I would really like people to understand that I learned about cannabis in the last 3 years is that there are components in this plant that have the potential to be useful in the treatment of cancer. Not just, look, every oncologist knows that cannabis will make you less nauseous and will increase your appetite. And anybody who's got chronic pain or any chronic illness, and AIDS, taking a lot of medicines, you know, when you're nauseous and you feel lousy and you can't get out of bed, the quality of your life is minimal and you don't want to eat and you end up sort of wasting away. So this is a medicine that will absolutely combat all of those things. But there are components in cannabis that actually will kill cancer cells and will cut off blood supply to tumors while leaving normal healthy cells intact. So I think what you're going to see in the next 10 years is that big pharma actually is going to sort of get on board, and you're going to see medicines that are based on cannabis, things like CBD, which is a cannabidiol, which looks like it can be very helpful in the treatment of cancer, as we said. And then also CBD decreases anxiety, helps with memory. It sort of does a lot of what the opposite of THC does. It doesn't really get you high or giddy. It gets you calm and focused. It seems to help with attention, concentration, memory. So what I think you're going to see, because, you know, big pharma is not interested in plants. You know, you can't patent a plant. Plants are very complicated. Cannabis has over 400 components. At least 60 of them are cannabinoids, psychoactive. But I think what you're going to see is sort of a standardization of components of cannabis, like CBD, that'll be available as chemotherapy to help to fight cancer. It's also an anti-inflammatory drug. It is a free radical scavenger, therefore an antioxidant. It's a muscle relaxer. So something like a multiple sclerosis, where you've got bladder spasticity and spastic muscles, when people who smoke pot to help with their MS, not only do they get symptom relief, but it looks like it can actually slow the progression of the illness because it modulates the immune response. You know, I mean, something that I learned a lot about, there's something called an endocannabinoid system, where in your body, even if you've never smoked pot, you have cannabinoids in your bloodstream. You have chemicals that are like pot in your blood that help to regulate your metabolism and your immune system and your inflammation response and your pain response. So when you smoke cannabis, it interacts with this endocannabinoid system. And I think that as a target for big pharma to start looking at molecules, therapeutic molecules, I think you're going to learn a lot more about endocannabinoids as in the next decade or so.
Boy, we ought to cue Bob Dylan singing Everybody Must Get Stoned. I mean, this has. But my guest is Dr. Julie Holland. She's edited 50 essays in The Pot Book, A Complete Guide to Cannabis, Its Role in Medicine, Politics, Science, and Culture. The website for it's an easy one, thepotbook.com. You go to my site as well. I'll have a link there. Peter Werbe, Werbe.com. Now, I'm actually, to some extent, almost surprised that there could be 50 separate essays that could treat different aspects.
Well, I actually had to, you know, there's extra ones on thepotbook.com. I had to cut a couple people. I guess I just want to say one little response to the Bob Dylan idea. You know, like every other medicine, I think there are certain people who probably should stay away, where it may do more harm than good. I mean, with any medicine, you have to sort of do a risk-benefit analysis and see what makes sense.
Well, let me interrupt you before you get to the Bob Dylan thing. There could be parents listening thinking, what in the hell are these two people talking about? My kid is not doing well in school. I find out that he's smoking marijuana, that I'm really concerned about him on a number of different levels. And
right.
Here you got two people, including a doctor, who's saying it's okay. Now, one of your...
Well, Not saying it's okay. I think, you know, anytime you're talking about kids or adolescents, their brains are still developing. They're still making connections. It's not fully formed yet. There's a lot of pruning that needs to go on. And I think that they're sort of a vulnerable patient population, and I don't recommend that kids have any mind-altering substances at all. I mean, I really don't like how over-treated and you know, I mean, in the field of psychiatry, it's a huge problem now where kids are being given a lot of different drugs that are designed for the adult brain and not the pediatric brain. So not recommending that kids use drugs. I'm also not recommending that anybody with any sort of a psychiatric history, any predisposition to anxiety disorders or psychosis especially, I think cannabis is not necessarily going to be a safe choice for you. And then you also have people with chronic lung issues or just sort of vulnerable lungs where smoking a medicine is not really going to be helpful for them. So it's not for everybody. I don't think everybody should get stoned, but I do think that there are many patient populations where a small amount of cannabis could allow them to take fewer pain medicines and fewer toxic medicines.
Well, in your book, the Pot Book, part four is cannabis culture, and there are two essays, one, What to Tell the Children, and another one, Pot Parenting and Outing Myself. What do they say? What do they advise
parents? Well, What to Tell the Children is written by Marcia Rosenbaum, who's really an expert on this, and she has a website, safetyfirst.com. I don't think it's .org, but it's safety1st.com. It might be .org. Anyway, if you go to the potbook.com, there's all sorts of links, and there's one there for Safety First. But she, you know, one of the most important things she talks about is just being able to talk to your kids and not turning them off so much that they don't want to open up to you and tell you what's going on.
Sure.
You know, kids need to know that you will listen to them and not judge them and be helpful to them and be a resource to them.
Well, go ahead.
I think that, well, please, you go on.
Well, all right. Another question is, because we've been mostly talking about the social effects of having it be illegal. I mean, the millions. Can we even count it? I mean, it must be tens of millions of people that have fallen afoul of the law, and the amount of money that it's cost, the human tragedy that the careers ruined, all of that, and people still smoke pot, and it's getting stronger all the time. So the war on drugs has been a catastrophic failure, hasn't it?
Right. It's easier for kids to get pot than adults, and it's more potent and cheaper. So I mean, whatever it is that we're doing really isn't working. And, you know, one of the things about taxing and regulating is that you could actually make it harder for kids to get it. Right now it's easier for kids to get pot than it is for them to get cigarettes or alcohol, and that is because dealers don't card. Dealers don't ask how old you are, and when you're at the dealer, they may be like, oh, well, you know, I also have some Coke if you want, or I have this thing called cheese, which, you know, kids are interested in, but it turns out it's really heroin. So at least if you can regulate it and take away some of that black market, right now it's very easy for kids to get pot. And one of the things I hear all the time that just is crazy to me is, like, in New York State, for instance, we don't have medical marijuana. And if a doctor says to a patient, you know, it's possible cannabis can help you with your nausea, with your pain, or with your arthritis, you know, with the inflammation, the patient says, okay, but where can I get it? And then the doctor says, do you know any kids? That's,
yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But that's the culture we live in right now, where it's easy. It's very easy for kids to get pot. It's easier for them to get it than it is for them to get alcohol.
Well, the political culture always lags behind popular culture, so the idea that there would be, for instance, any major rollback of the prohibition of marijuana still seems kind of distant. In fact, because of a lot of reasons, the Obama administration announced that even if California legalizes marijuana for recreational use, that was an interesting slip, that the federal government will increase its federal surveillance and prosecution.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, the Obama administration, I mean, everybody who's sort of involved in drug policy really thinks that this is going to go state by state. I mean, that's what happened with alcohol prohibition also, is it got repealed state by state, and it took a long time before the whole country finally got behind the repeal. And it is going state by state. And I think, you know, depending on how California does in the next couple weeks, I think that you're going to see three or four more states voting on this in 2012. I don't know how, you know, what's going to happen or how it works in terms of state law or federal law. But the Obama administration has been clear that they're not going after the dispensaries, that, you know, they want to sort of leave a wide berth for the medical marijuana patients. I imagine there'll be some sort of test cases. I mean, well, you know, I'm very curious to see what's going to happen in 2 weeks and whether it's going to pass in November or not. It seems like it's very close. And it's been interesting now who's been coming out in support of Prop 19, in support of legalizing cannabis. Law enforcement officials and law professors, police officers and DAs and mothers, and huge unions in California, and the Association of Black Churches and the NAACP. I mean, one of the things we should probably talk about is how incredibly racist our drug policies are right now. I mean,
from
even
its from its origins.
You know, percentage-wise, white people smoke at a higher percentage than people of color. But when you look at who's in our prisons, it's primarily African-American and Latino people who are being prosecuted. So, and it's always been this way. I mean, even back in the 30s, you know, when they wanted to make cannabis illegal, they all the articles in the Hearst papers were about, you know, the loco weed and the Mexican migrant workers are going to, you know, rape your white women, or about the black Southern musicians who are smoking their meds. I mean, it's always been a racist issue. There's a great chapter in the book written by Harry Levine about the arrest statistics in New York City. I mean, this is where I practice in New York City. It's the marijuana arrest capital of the world. And it's something like 80% is black and brown. And that's not the makeup of the city. And that's not the makeup of people who are smoking.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's very sort of racially enforced, our drug laws.
Well, as I'm sure you know, there was a point where Harry Anslinger, who was head of the Drug Enforcement Department, who was about as crazy as Herbert Hoover was about communists and what have you, he had this plan. He was going to arrest all these great black jazz musicians like Count Basie and Duke Ellington. Fortunately, there was somebody the upper echelons that said, absolutely not, we can't do it. Well, we only have about 60 seconds left, and, I mean, to some extent, summing up is hard. I mean, legalize it, as the Wailers sang, but information is needed, and the myths that are laid out in the beginning of the book from the late John Paul Morgan are addressed by 50 essayists. It's the Pot Book, A Complete Guide to Cannabis, Its Role in Medicine, Politics, Science, and Culture. And we barely scratched the surface in terms of the people that are represented here. It's very impressive, the writers. And you can go to thepotbook.com, and it's published by Park Street Press. They've got some interesting titles. It's parkstpress.com. One more website, it's available, the link is on my site, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. And Judy Holland, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werbe Show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Join Ann Carlini tomorrow from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. for a Lions Ticket Blitz at the Warren Verizon Wireless Store on East 12 Mile. Stop by and register to win tickets to see the Lions battle the Redskins at Ford Field this Sunday, October 31st. Also register to win passes to a pregame rooftop party, including food and drink. All courtesy of Droid X and Droid 2, the next generation of does, only from Verizon Wireless. Check them out while you're at the Verizon Wireless Store in Warren.
Feels like time's running out. Maxed out on your credit cards, collection calls are coming every day, and you're two payments behind on your mortgage. You need help. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. Call 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101, The Real Riff.
I guess we got caught up in the crazy housing boom.
We had been in the house so long, we didn't want to lose it.
What these people share is that they all got in trouble with their mortgages, and they all called a certified housing counselor for help.
Our housing counselor looked at our paperwork, and she knew something was wrong.
She understood what needed to be done, and she helped me work it out with the bank. This is a free service. Call the National Foundation for Credit Counseling now. Call 1-866-687-6322 or visit mortgagehelpnow.org.
101, The Riff.
Over there's the water.
whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at pornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
McGruff the Crime Dog here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff Comic Activity Book.
And it's full of me.
The address is...
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride.
Scruff, Chicago, Illinois,
and it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write...
Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time.
Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
You'll be helping me take a bite out of crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ad Council.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. It's been a long time since people have been chanting, USA, number one, number one. Well, it was sports, but people always would say we live in the greatest country in the world. Well, it's our country, and it's got a lot of good things about it. A lot of problems these days, and you don't hear the number one or we're the greatest country in the world any longer. And we got to think about fixing things, and we got two ways, or they could probably be combined. One would be totally innovative, sort of make things up right from scratch, sort of the way the founding fathers did, revolution and all that. The other thing we could do, and I say we could combine all of this, would be to use some models elsewhere, right? Well, one of the things that President Barack Obama has been accused of by the far right wing is that he's a socialist, and even worse, a European socialist. Well, how bad is that? We're going to check that out. Thomas Gagan has written a book called Were You Born on the Wrong Continent? How the European Model Can Help You Get a Life. And Tom Gagan is an attorney, a practicing attorney. In fact, he's the author of several books. He reminded me about one of the books that I like considerably that he wrote, Which Side Are You On? It was so long ago. I don't you know how you compress time. I don't even want to say how long ago. Tom Gagan has written for The Nation, The New York Times, and Harper's. We're reaching him at his law office in Chicago. Thanks for joining me on the Peter Werby Show.
Sure. Thank you, Peter.
Well, what, the European socialism? I mean, it's not even like old communism, but somehow critics of Barack Obama have said that he's lifted the playbook from these European socialists, and we're all going to be suffering that soon. Not exactly the way you see things, huh?
Oh, if only he had lifted the playbook. And the book that I wrote is what the playbook would be if we tried to create a globally competitive economy like Germany, which is what the book focuses on, an economy where with 82 million people taking 6 to 7 weeks off every year on vacation, they still are either the number one exporter in the world or tied with China every single year for the last 10 years. They're not in debt. They have lower unemployment. They have a much higher savings rate. People have huge golden parachute type pensions. I don't mean CEOs. I mean ordinary working people. They have free college education. They have health care that is completely taken care of. And why wouldn't you want to live that way, you know? But we don't use that playbook.
Well, what are the institutional or political or cultural, probably they all come into play, impediments to all that? Well, wait a minute. Maybe we ought to do this first. I mean, we always talk about USA, as I said in my introduction, number one, the greatest country in the world. How does the United States fare? And I'm sorry, did you mention healthcare in your description of Germany?
Of course.
Yeah.
But Peter, the United States is number one in my book. It always will be because it's my home, it's my country. And there is this wonderful informality about the United States. You know, Harold Washington, our mayor here, who died in 1987, had this wonderful way of capturing what is so great about the United States when he said, you know, in the United States, we don't bow, we don't scrape, we don't defer to other people. In the United States, Harold Washington said, if you want something in this country, you knock down the damn wall. You know, and there's this wonderful energy, boisterousness, informality, flexibility about America that I love. Mm-hmm. But people have a sense right now that we're in national decline. We are the world's biggest debtor country. We have enormous debt. We have an erosion of our manufacturing base that is documented in the huge trade deficit we've been running in cumulatively more and more and more and more for the last 30 years or so. So I've wanted to write a book that is very much oriented from a old-fashioned Midwestern point of view. I grew up in Cincinnati. We took all our vacations in Michigan. I live in Illinois. And this book is taking a page from Germany, sort of what the United States might have been like if it had continued on the New Deal-type path towards the kind of social democracy that the Europeans have today. That's why I wrote it.
Explain, though, what you mean by the phrase social democracy, because that comes up a little in the right-wing narrative. Usually they're just saying that it's socialism. But social democracy has a different quality. And maybe historically, because that lingering sense from the 20th century of communism is socialism and socialist communism or communist socialism is totalitarian, what social democracy means. And social democracy always an opponent of communism, actually.
Sure. Social democracy, it's a version of our, it's New Deal America grown to adulthood, is how I would put it. It's our own New Deal, you know, extended and continued in Europe, where, in fact, the Americans who won the war put into place in the post-1945 European constitutions exactly what is in the UN Declaration of Human Rights, which we also drafted. And it has in that those documents right to health care, right to education, right to employment as constitutional rights, right to join a labor union. None of those rights exist in the American Constitution and were not put in 1930s and 1940s, even though the majority of the country promoted that, because it's just too darn hard to amend the Constitution. And over the years, because we don't have a real majoritarian democracy here, look at the Senate filibusters, et cetera, which keep knocking down things like labor law reform, you know, we've gone off the rails. We've created we've warped into an entirely different kind of United States, much more laissez-faire, much more plutocratic than the United States that existed when I was growing up and that, you know, many of your listeners recall from the 1950s and 1960s. I mean, Detroit people especially would recall. The Europeans, in a version of it, still have what we had. So in some ways, social democracy is something like old-fashioned America that we've scrapped. Is that what we're afraid of going back to? At any rate, I wanted to write this book to show why the Europeans were able not only to continue this in a globalized economy, but actually survive in a globalized economy precisely because they have this system, and not in spite of it.
Hmm. The book is Were You Born on the Wrong Continent? How the European Model Can Help You Get a Life. Thomas Gagan is the author. You can go to his website, Tom Gagan. It takes a bit to spell it, G-E-O-G-H-E-G-A-N. If you're driving, you probably didn't get it. Go to my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com, which has to be spelled as well, and I'll have a link or just go at it, and maybe it'll pop up in Google. Now,
Peter, it takes years to learn to spell it.
If I had to close my eyes, I don't think I could. But anyway.
What are the things that the Europeans are doing that are old European, so that are old U.S. type social democracy taken forward? I'll tell you, there are three things that I would derive as public policy lessons of this book, which is not just a public policy book. It's kind of a travelogue. It's trying to introduce people into the sense of what their lives would be like if they had all this extra time off that Europeans have and if they retired early.
Because you traveled to Germany quite a few times,
Berlin,
in writing this book. Yeah, Germany. Yeah, go ahead.
It's the European Chicago. That's why I went there. There are three things that I would say that they do that we don't do, the Germans in particular. First, they don't let private companies, private vendors, make profiteer off the distribution of public goods. Now, what does that mean? It just means look at the way insurance companies jack up the prices of health care in this country and add huge amounts of cost to it. I mean, we spend 17% of our GDP on health care, and we don't cover 40, 50 million people. The Europeans, the Germans, the top is like 10 or 11%, and mostly it's less than that, and they have great systems of health care. Germany, France, I mean, it's... you can see it in the stats. They have less disease. Their longevity is now creeping ahead of ours. So, and education, you don't spend $50,000 a year to send your kids to college like at NYU. It's free. So public goods are distributed in a much more efficient way because we don't let the private market profiteer off it. So that means that people don't go into debt paying for these public goods. And it also means, and people in Detroit understand this better than anywhere else, if you look at GM, Chrysler, and how retiree health care costs made them less competitive. Pardon me.
We've all have that cold, Tom.
Yes, yeah. I have a cold.
Tom Gagan said he was going to try not to cough, and I'm covering for him right now. And when he's talking, I turn the microphone off and I cough. So go ahead if you got it.
So we don't do that. We let companies profiteer off that. That means that our people go into debt, and our goods are very hard to sell abroad.
Okay.
Number two. And again, I'll use a kind of big clunky phrase and then try to break it down. They have a system where what I would call human capital, this really high-skilled labor, is able to put some control over financial capital. And what I mean by that, really, in the German case, is they have co-determined boards. You know, in the big global companies, 2,000 employees or more, half the boards are elected directly by people on the shop floor.
Oh.
And those boards aren't exactly like our executive boards, but it's a tie between the employees and the shareholders. Now, in case of a tie, the shareholders have a decisive vote. They have a double vote, so they can win by one vote. But if there's a split among the shareholders, the employees pick the CEO.
Mm.
And this has had a way of creating conditions where working people, and I don't mean just in unions, but just the people in the company, can say, okay, we can send out that assembly line to Ruritania, but as a condition of our doing that, and we can't stop you, but to facilitate that and make that easier for you, we want you to put more money into keeping a very high-tech facility in Bremen, Germany, instead. So there's this bargaining back and forth that doesn't take place between employer and union. People misunderstand that. It's within the company. It's part of the corporate structure. Employees are part of the corporate government there. And that's why I said to my friends when I started out this project that as a union side lawyer, I was interested in Germany because of all the countries on the planet, this is the country that has the most worker control. Maybe even by comparison with the old Soviet Union and certainly with communist China and certainly with communism. They had more worker control.
There wasn't any worker control with those guys. Yeah.
It was bogus.
Yeah.
And yet, the country that has the highest wage pension benefit package and the most worker control that have the most influence as to how the company is operating happens to be, if you look at the actual sales, export sales of the country, the most preposterously successful country in the world. The Obama administration, as we speak, is going around and begging two countries to stop being so competitive. One, we're familiar with, China. Mm-hmm. The other one, which is more amazing and in some ways far worse for us, is Germany. Now, why is Germany, which is tied with China right now, but usually ahead of China, why is Germany worse for us? Well, for one thing, the euro, if anything, is way over valued. You know, it's the one currency that keeps floating up, and yet the Germans keep being competitive. I mean, the Chinese can only stay even with the Germans because they control their currency. The second is that Germany, of course, makes more money off of China than China makes off of Germany. The third is that Germany is taking our markets. I mean, they are competing around the world at this high value end sort of stuff that we should be getting. No, German goods are not flooding into America, but America is not selling its weight in the world because the Germans are taking our markets. And if you would look realistically at who is responsible for our trade deficit, the trade deficit is just our failure to sell abroad. And in the markets where we should be selling, Germany's got the markets. And they're doing it with a unionized, not only unionized, kind of a worker control system that we aren't even close to having.
It's amazing, too, when it's hard to anticipate what people are thinking. When we leave the economic arena that you're describing now and go back a little more to the benefits of social democracy and the European model that you describe, Tom Gagin, and were you born on the wrong continent, people say, well, you know, what a cradle-to-grave socialism. They're overtaxed and we're overtaxed. Nanny state, I don't want to lose my freedoms to get a little bit of material goods. That's what occurs to me that pops into a lot of head, particularly that sort of American peculiarism we want to be free from government control, and those Europeans, particularly the French, they're controlled by the government, although you wouldn't think so these days, would you?
Well, I would say this, that the great thing that the Germans and the Europeans generally have that we don't have is freedom. And freedom from in the New Deal, we fought World War II on the four freedoms, and they were freedom from fear and freedom from insecurity. There is an amazing amount of freedom in Europe because, for one thing, people are off for 6 or 7 weeks every year, and they have umpteen holidays, and they go home when they're supposed to go home and aren't made to work late off the clock, as happens routinely in hourly wage America, I can tell you from personal experience. But in a bigger sense, look at their savings rates. I mean, they have oodles of money in the bank. We're all in debt. They aren't going into bankruptcy court. They aren't going to be dragged in because of the health bill. They aren't going to be dragged into bankruptcy court or lose or hit the streets because they can't pay for mom's nursing home. They don't have to worry about tuition. They don't have to worry about this, that, and the other thing. And it creates an enormous amount of energy. Now, some people will say, well, come on, that's too idealistic a picture. They have poverty in Germany. They have poverty in France. They have poverty in all these countries. There's immigration, et cetera, et cetera. That's all true. But it's at the edges of this picture. It is not the core of the picture. And that's the difference between the European model and the United States. A French guy came to one of my lectures, you know, on this book, and came up to me afterwards and said, oh, yes, well, I liked what you said. He said, I'm from France. I'm here in the United States. I love the United States, he said. I think the United States is fantastic because you can just go up to anybody. You don't have to bow and scrape. It was kind of the Harold Washington line he was giving to me. He said, there's only one problem with the United States. What's that? No middle class. You know, and we think of ourselves as a middle-class country, but when Europeans, when the French come here, when the Germans come here, what they think is there's no middle class in this country in what they envision as the middle class, a place where there's security, where you can pursue your career, where you aren't tossed out on your tailbone for any reason at any time, at any point in your career, where you aren't constantly changing jobs, where you aren't worried about being in bankruptcy court over and over, where you're not in debt, where you're not running up, where you're not spending, 20% of your income over your lifetime paying interest rates on loans. I mean, they just find that stupefying.
Well, you in your book, Were You Born on the Wrong Continent, you talk about the European model. In fact, the subtitle is How the European Model Can Get Help You Get, let me say it correctly, How the European Model Can Help You Get a Life. Now, the German model, okay, but we know that Germany, Italy, France, and I'm sorry, France, Greece, because of this high state expenditures, they're having economic problems. They're heading towards austerity. They say that they're overspending. How does that, or does it conflict with what you're saying about Germany?
Oh, I think the Germans aren't going into debt because they don't have to go into debt. You know, you go into debt, first of all, their unemployment is lower than ours, and second, they're running huge trade surpluses, not deficits. So what does that mean? The Americans say, well, we want the Germans to go into debt because we want the Germans to buy a lot more, and if the Germans buy a lot more, then American goods will do well. So we have an interest in them going into debt, and we think that if they go into debt, it will help other European countries.
Well,
the answer to that is we have to go into debt partly to pay for our trade deficit. That is, we have to create demand for American goods and services to get to full employment. They don't have to go into as much debt to get the same effect because they have people in other countries, Brazil, China, if you will believe that, who are paying more for German goods than Germans are buying from them on the world stage generally. So the stimulus that we need by going into debt for the federal government, the stimulus there, and they do have enormous amounts of stabilizers and unemployment, and I'll get to that in a second. But the stimulus, the extra spending, comes from abroad. And one of our problems, and it's recognized by at least some economists, is that we're running a trade deficit every year. We're always broke. So either the consumers, as a country, we're always broke. We always owe the world more than the world owes us. So as a country, we've got two options. We can have consumers go into debt, which is what we did during the Bush era, and we had people going out and buying mortgages and running up their visas, et cetera, and having money lent to us, usually from abroad, to pay for the trade deficit, which we're continually running because Detroit and other places aren't competitive in the world. Or if consumers stop going into debt, which they have since 2008, we have the federal government going into debt to help the consumers get out of debt. You know, it's not like the federal government just sort of one day woke up and say, oh, let's go into debt. We have no choice. I mean, somebody's got to say, the books have got to balance out. So either the consumers have to go into debt or the federal government does. So the federal government is going into debt right now precisely because the consumers can't. They've got to pay back what they owe. They're being dragged into foreclosure courts and so forth, and they stop spending and they don't have jobs. So to make up the difference, because we're still running a huge trade deficit every year, the federal government has to step up and do what consumers used to do. I mean, there's no way out of that. So people who talk about deficit hawks and, oh, we're going to bring down the deficit and so forth, I mean, they're crazy. I mean, it doesn't work that way when you're a debtor country. If we were a surplus country like Germany and China, we could talk like that, but we can't. So one of the great things about European social democracy, this is true about France, this is true about Scandinavia, it's about Germany, they're all surplus countries. And they get a lot of their stimulus from abroad. They don't have to do what we're doing right now, so they don't.
Well, let me get a couple quick questions because this whole discussion is critical to the future of this country. We're an empire in decline. Empires in decline rarely pull out of it. And suggestions like Tom Gagin is making in Were You Born on the Wrong Continent is something we ought to be considering. But let me ask quickly. One is the 800-pound gorilla in the American living room, and that's the budget for war. I mean, depending on how you're counting, every year we're taking tax dollars and taking $700 billion to $1 trillion preparing for a war against guys that use roadside bombs and fight with AK-47s barefoot. So there is this enormous amount of wealth that could be that's being transferred from us, the earners, to the government. It's just not going in a very economical direction.
Well, you could question that. First of all, I'm a liberal Democrat, and that means that, I was one of the people. there's a thing in Slate magazine from years back where they poll it. Number of people as to whether we should go into Iraq or not. And it's bizarre how few people are against it. And I happen to be one of them. I was writing the piece saying, let's not go into Iraq. And I've got all sorts of questions about Afghanistan, Pakistan, India. I don't think that's the problem. Military, something like 4% of our GDP. Healthcare is 17%. You know, if you look at the extra increment that we're spending on healthcare in a terribly inefficient way here, it's just the increment that we're spending over a country like Germany, not to mention France or Sweden or Norway. I mean, that's like two or three times what we're spending on the military. It's Paul Krugman, the economist who writes for the New York Times, once described the federal government as an insurance company with a sideline in defense. It is a sideline. That's not to say we couldn't spend the money better. Perhaps so. But the other thing to keep in mind is the following. Number one, what created the social democracy in the United States, especially in the 1940s and 1950s, was war. You know, I mean, that's what kind of created the middle class, World War II. And it's really what allowed the unions to unionize. But the second is that, you know, a lot of our exports that keep us, our trade deficits from being worse, come from the military. So it's not, I'm against military spending, but for reasons that have, that are separate and apart from the economic impact.
We're going to have to leave it at that, unfortunately. This is a larger discussion. I even have some disagreement, but we will maybe...
Lots of people do.
We'll talk about that another time. Thomas Gagin has been my guest. You can go to tomgagin.com. It's G-E-O-G-H-E-G-A-N. Maybe a little easier, you could go to thenewpress.com. It's the publisher of Tom's latest book, Were You Born on the Wrong Continent, How the European Model Can Help You Get a Life, very challenging to our concept of, how politics and social services should be run. You can also go to my website, Peter Werbe, werbe.com, and there'll be a link to Tom's book. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Sure, Peter.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit. That's the sound of people throwing out their old dehumidifiers. They've replaced them with the energy-saving Wave Ventilation Unit. Wave Ventilation expels moisture, gases, and toxins trapped in your basement or crawl space and replaces it with drier, fresher air. The computerized Wave Ventilation requires no maintenance. There are no buckets to empty, no filters to change. And compared to a dehumidifier, it will save you hundreds of dollars a year in energy costs. One customer wrote,
I was stunned by the difference. I had a dehumidifier for almost 20 years without ever getting rid of that musty smell. And now that smell is finally gone.
Wave can transform your home into a drier, healthier environment. Satisfaction guaranteed. Find out more about Wave Ventilation right now. For free information, go to goodairnow.com. That's goodairnow.com. Or call 1-866-324-9481. That's 1-866-324-9481.
If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronix Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronix Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronix Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe-clogging lime scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
Now's the time.
Now's the time to make a difference.
Now's the time to do what's right.
To help a family.
Now's the time to volunteer.
To make a commitment.
To make new friends.
To make dreams come true.
To help a child.
Now's the time to help Habitat for Humanity build hope and change lives with a family in your community or around the world.
Now's the time.
Now, more than ever, help build it.
Visit Habitat.org.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Play ball!
Now pitching, Dave Black.
Dave is about to catch his opponent off guard. Not with his nasty fastball, no. Instead of a fastball, Dave will be hurling a tomato.
And the pitch.
Ooh. Using tomatoes as baseballs won't go over well with anyone. But if you're looking to hit the ball further and throw better, eating a healthy diet that includes fruits and vegetables is a home run. Packed with nutrients, they could help keep your body healthy and strong, giving you the energy you need to hit that grand slam. When you look at it this way, eating tomatoes is playing hardball against the competition. Run, throw, think, eat better. Can your food do that? Find out at smallstep.gov.
That's smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
It's go time.
Now!
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Everything that rocks.
to all the